I think there's a bit of a space problem, but hopefully the secretariat will try and assist us. Maybe just indicate our focus for today. There will be a briefing by the Civilian Secretariat for Police on the question of appliance to the Domestic Violence Act. It is a very important act, and we also welcome a delegation from the police. Then the status on the full implementation of the Civilian Secretariat Act 2011, a quarterly report of the activities of the Secretariat in terms of Section 30 of the Act, the status of the regulations of the Civilian Secretariat Act, as well as progress report on implementation of the Firearms Control Act and the challenges identified this regard, as well as possible amendments, and then a short information also on the white paper. Let us give the opportunity for the members to introduce themselves before I go to the Secretariat and the police.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Andy Muliwati. I'm a member of this committee. Thank you.
Morning, my name is Sylvia Mola. I'm a member of this committee. Thank you.
My name is Zakele
Mbele. Good morning, my name is Zakele Mbele, member of the committee.
And I'm Darren Kobana, also member.
Thank you. Ask the secretary of acting secretary to introduce our delegation.
Morning, honorable members. I'm Wicked Mashizini, the head of corporate services, senior secretary for police.
Good morning,
I'm going down from the police.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Adam Mudan, the head of the police and the head of the Civil Police and Security.
Good morning, honorable chairperson, honorable members. My name is Major Nizim, secretary of the
police. Good morning, members. My name is Kwaitam Sarabam, the secretary of the police from the ME unit.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, members. My name is Andy Sanfield from the MNU unit within the CFC.
Good morning, my name is Charlotte Luria from the ITID.
To ask the members of SAFS.
Good morning, honorable Chair, and honorable members. I'm Deputy National Commissioner.
Other two generals?
Morning, honorable chairperson, honorable members. I'm Major General Mosala, acting Minister of Police and National Police.
Thank you very much for the introductions. Maybe just before we go to the presentations, just maybe indicate that the matter of domestic violence is an issue that has gripped our society for a very long time. So it's a very important focus area also for this committee. We are in the time of leading up to the 16 days activism campaign. So we must really look frankly at where we are in terms of the act. How are we doing in terms of ensuring that it's implemented? What are the problems? There is still serious concerns about, you know, that environment, and this reporting committee will this morning critically look at those areas. Just looking at the report, it's for us a concern that there's still a lot of members of SAPS who are also, involved in those actions, and we need strong action against those members. So that's going to be quite critical. Maybe just to go to the DVA report, we'll have just deal with that first. And just a word of caution, We as portfolio committee expect from all institutions who will appear before us to ensure that all reports that are tabled at Parliament is of a high quality and it can stand scrutiny. Unfortunately, the report that we have looked at in terms of the GBA that was made available to us is not of a good quality. I don't even want to refer to the spelling errors, grammar errors, typographical errors. It is not the shoddy work. And we don't think such a report should be tabled at Parliament. There should be a proper quality control in place, like the presentations we received today. We're happy with that. But really, I think we're not happy with that. There should be, I think, in the ideal situation, the retabling of the document. It must be properly scrutinized and signed off. It looks like a junior official did a clip and pluck and presented it. But we can't have that, because that's an official report, and we can't treat the oversight institution with content like that. And it's such an important topic. If we don't put the question of domestic violence at the center of our discussion in society, we're not going to deal with it effectively. So if the institution that starts to deal with it deals with it in such a fashion, we as a portfolio committee can't accept it. So I just want to put that up front. Any members who want to normalize it?
Yeah, thanks, sir. Just to add on what you were saying, the cover page, for instance, right at the bottom, thank you very much, it's one word, and it's not supposed to be like that. The next one is on page 4. The third paragraph, at the end, there's no full stop. I can go on and on and on and on and on. Thanks, sir.
Thank you very much. Any other comments, members? Right, let's then go over to the presentation on the DBA, and we will then after that do a request. Over to the Acting Secretary, Anna Key.
How the 11th letter to proceed with the presentation? Thank you, Secretary. I assume all the members have copies of the presentation. Yes, okay. It's a 40-page presentation that we'll be going through. Okay, starting off at slide number 2 of the presentation. We know that the Domestic Violence Act has been in implementation for almost 15 years, as it was promulgated in 1999. And in terms of the Act, the SAPS is compelled to comply with the provisions of the Domestic Violence Act. And failure to do so constitutes misconduct. Now, in terms of the DVA specific duties to set.
Sorry to stop you there. I just want to say no on-screen version available.
It has been sent to you.
Just respond to that. This particular one, looking at the report, is good because we were under the pressure of all our next two parts of our.
It's your duty as the presenting institution to make sure light steps come beforehand, an hour before, check out the material, you check out the technical, and you have the presentation on board. But this, you don't have to be working on time, but I think again,
Okay. Can we then go to the next one? All right. These are the specific duties that the Act is prescribing to the SAPS, and amongst these obligations, SAPS is supposed to develop a national instruction, provide assistance to complainants through, among other things, assistance to get medical attention, referral to other service providers, and for psychosocial services. Also, is to ensure compliance with all requirements of the Act. And lastly, is to report any complaints of non-compliance against sex members to the Civilian Secretariat for Police. Now, previously, these were referred to the IDD, but since we have taken over the monitoring of the DBA, the implementation of the DBA, these non-compliant complaints are supposed to be forwarded to the SAPS. As you will see when we proceed with the presentation, that we actually aren't receiving these from the SAPS at this stage.
Next
one.
Okay.
All our acts mandate us to monitor and evaluate. This is a way of background. To monitor and evaluate the SAPS compliance with DBA. And this is done through oversight visits that we conduct at police stations, and also interacting with some of the complainants that we find at the police station at the time we are there, or also the complainants that are referred to us by some of the community-based structures that we work with. So what we're presenting today is a report that covers a period from March 2013 to March 2014. So it's the work that has been undertaking for the full 12 months. In the 12 months, we audited 280 police stations and then compiled the report thereof. The first 6 months was 135 sites visited, and the following period was 145. Now, these visits that we conduct are aimed at looking at regulatory compliance in terms of the DBA, record keeping, services offered to complainants, and the management of non-compliance complaints. So the report that we're presenting will report to these issues. Now, in terms of the level of compliance, the key focus areas that we look into are then coded and interpreted into a score of 100. And the score that you can get as follows: full compliance is 100%, partial compliance is between 60 and 99, and non-compliance we regard as anything below 60%. In principle, what we're trying to divert is that at no stage it should be expected that SAPS doesn't comply 100% in terms of the provisions of the Act and their own national instruction and sometimes the station orders. Now, in assessing the level of compliance, you notice, as you are aware, that it looks mostly at administrative obligations, and also it doesn't mean that a station that is 100% compliant delivers good service to the community, and the one that isn't is also not doing well. What we then try to do is to cross-reference the information that we get out of the audit with the components that we interview, and we then provide that balance in terms of our reporting. So if we move on to the next slide, when we talk to the level of compliance per province, as you will notice, for the next period, we are expected to provide reports on a 6 monthly basis to Parliament on the level of compliance. Now, for the first period, April to September 2013, you would notice that none of the stations visited reached 100% compliance level. Nationally, we're looking at an average of 67.9, which is partial compliance. Now, this is quite crucial for us because at a national level, we also are responsible for policy development. Now, when we analyze these trends over a period of time, we are able to inform policy on a national level.
I just want to issue and just want to clarify now, in terms of portraying the food situation in the country, the biggest provinces in South Africa, or some of the biggest population centers, Eastern Cape, is only four, KZN only four, Western Cape only four. Mm-hmm. You know, that we can get the explanation later. In terms of the statistical model, if you think or think of the smaller provinces, how can you really project what is the national picture?
Okay, all right, thank you. We'll address that. Right, now in terms of the next period, you're also looking at a 72% compliance level based on the stations that we visited. Now, the analysis, when you look at those the two periods, that there is a slight improvement in terms of compliance level. And this can be attributed to the fact that presentation of report is done, firstly at the police station level, and then at cluster level, and then also in the information forwarded to the provincial offices. But then also, what we have undertaken as the CBN Secretariat, as national office, is to follow up on previously audited police stations so that we can start to gauge the level of improvement in terms of compliance. Though it is concerning that during April to September, there wasn't a single police station that obtained 100% compliance. The next period, we have two stations, and those are in the first stage that managed to obtain 100% compliance. And we have plans to go to those stations so that we can document best practice and see how then that could be replicated to other provinces, because that means there is something that they are doing correctly at our station, and we hope that it will be maintained even after follow-up process that will be undertaken. Now, The next table reflects various levels of compliance and performance at each during the two periods. I've already touched on this to say in the previous period there wasn't, and in the period October to March there were two stations that are achieved. So it's basically a summary of what I have spoken about. Now, the availability of friendly, victim-friendly routes. For the first period, out of the 185 police stations visited, only 94 had a functional VFR, which is your friendly, your victim-friendly room. 16 police stations had the VFR, but it was not utilized for the purpose that it was intended to. You find that sometimes officers sleep in these rooms. You find that it's not clean. So there are various observations that we have made. But when we are at the station, we then give instructions that these need to be corrected immediately. And then on follow-up visits, then these are monitored. Now, out of these, 25 didn't have any VFR at all because of lack of space within the police station. But I know the CF is working on ensuring that multiple stations should have victim-friendly rooms. And there is still also a challenge with the management and the shopping of these victim-friendly rooms. Some could not be accessed because the key is there's a responsibility that is given to an officer to keep the key, and when we undertake the visit on that particular day, we find that we couldn't access them because the officer is either off sick or not on duty or out in a station, and so we couldn't access to view their rooms. So we feel that this needs to be addressed, and this service needs to be made available at all times to all victims. For the next period, the picker depicts again what was available and what was not available. Next slide. I've already touched on this to say sometimes these rooms are not used for purposes that they were intended to. So I'll give a slide 15. Non-compliant complaints, as indicated earlier, to say in terms of the national instruction and the act, the FAPS is expected to record non-compliant complaints against its members. And the chart below indicates the number of non-compliant cases that were reported against such and disciplinary proceedings instituted, that is for the first period, which is held to September 2013. You will notice that in total there were 27 non-compliance cases, and out of that 25 disciplinary proceedings were instituted. We still now need to get feedback as to how may those disciplinary cases resolve from the SAPS. The net light deals with the same for the period following, which is October to March 2014. And in total, the next slide it's the same issue on non-compliance and disciplinary proceedings that have been undertaken. Now, in terms of analysis, you will notice that the Western Cape has the highest number of reported cases of non-compliance during the period under review, and all these cases reported disciplinary action against members. And as I mentioned earlier on, is that we need to get feedback from the SAPS how far those have gone. But then also what we find with the Western Cape provincial office is that it seems to be encouraging reporting of non-compliance. And they provided systems to ensure that these are properly captured and recorded, and hence they have high numbers in this regard. In essence, this is what we want to see in terms of DVA. In order for us to start to address the scale, we need to encourage that these are reported so that they are dealt with properly. Right, next slide. DVA incidents reported against members. Now this is for the next period. I've just completed the first period. Out of 135 stations, 37 stations in 8 provinces reported that 59 cases were recorded against such members. Out of the 59 reported incidents, 28 firearms have been seized. Now it's concerning to say what happens to the rest if only 28 firearms were seized. And out of that, 30 criminal cases were opened and 16 were withdrawn by containment. The withdrawal of these cases is quite concerning for us, and we are in a process of looking into the causes, saying why is this often happening frequently. Is it because complainants are financially dependent on some of these perpetrators, or is it because they've been threatened? Because some of them, it's cases withdrawn against such members and the trust. So we really would need to look into the root causes of why the system is quite a huge number out of, say, 59. The table below just indicates the breakdowns in terms of numbers. Like in one. Now for the test period, 74 out of the 145 were found to have been offenders in domestic violence. Out of these, 40 criminal cases were opened, and the graph on slide 32 basically depicts the DVA incidents reported against, this is against sex members. So again, as you will notice, the Western Cape has recorded the highest number. Slide 23. Even though majority of the incidents, especially where criminal cases have been opened, firearms were seized, it is still concerning to note that there are some stations which didn't seize firearms. So this is basically breaking down the information that we spoke to earlier on. Now, if the firearm is not seized, it's a contravention of the Firearms Control Act. So the FAPS needs to ensure that the firearms are seized at all times. Training. The numbers, we must comment to FHS in that the numbers in terms of members who have received DVA training has increased over a period. But what is concerning is that the training doesn't seem to translate at the implementation level. Because you get to a station where most of the members are trained, but you still find problems in terms of the recording, in terms of the keeping of the necessary documents at the CSE. So what we have undertaken together with the SAPS is that we need to observe the delivery of the training, because we have assessed as a compliance forum the training that is the curricula basically on DVA. And we found it to be quite comprehensive. So we're not sure as to where the problem is, because when it goes to implementation, we get the opposite. Now, the next slide just shows the numbers of all members that have been trained. As I said, there is improvement in terms of the numbers when compared to previous periods. Now, in strengthening oversight and sub-implementation of DVA, we have made various recommendations, and these are categorized into four areas. Okay. The first one talks to the implementation of the Act. The CSP, in partnership with SAPS and Joint Gender Fund, hosted a government civil society dialogue in August in an attempt to try to address the scourge of violence against women and girls in particular. Now, this is an intervention that was initiated by the CSP, and it brought together various stakeholders, that is, from government, civil society together with the SAPS. Now, out of this process, a manifesto was developed, a manifesto that talks to how policy can be improved at a local level in terms of policing violence against women. The manifesto has been finalized. It was launched recently in the Northern Cape, and we are going to go back to monitor the implementation thereof. Now, it has four key indicators that we look at, and each and every role player has a specific indicator that they are responsible for. So we are coordinating that process, and it also includes the involvement of other departments at a local level.
So this was the first of its kind, and it has proven to have been very successful in that it provided a platform for the various stakeholders to engage on issues that relate to gender-based studies. Now, implementation of recommendations by us. Now, we have established a compliance forum, and that compliance forum's main purpose is to look at the recommendations that we make as the TFP, and to then ensure that these are implemented. Now, the forum used to sit quite frequently, but recently it was communicated that it should sit only twice per annum, just before then these reports are finalized. Now, this proved to be quite an effective mechanism, because at this stage we have all the data, we know where the problems are in terms of the implementation of the Domestic Violence Act. But we're still finding that over a period of 15 years, what has been reported before still exists in terms of non-compliance, in terms of not meeting the obligations of the Act, the national instruction. So we then started to say, for us to be effective as an organization, we need to start to monitor the implementation of our recommendations, which is then done through this compliance forum. Now, divisions, key divisions within the FAPS sit in this compliance forum, so that we ensure effective coordination thereof. Now, the first recommendation that has been implemented by SAP was that station commanders should be obliged to discuss DVA as a standing item during station lectures. And we have noticed that a circular has been issued in this regard, and when we visit the stations, we find evidence that it's part of the, it's a same item, which is a good thing. The national instruction should include a paragraph on reporting and record keeping of data of members. The national instruction is silent on this issue. But what has happened is that new reporting templates have been developed by the FAPS, and these are already in implementation. This is now to ensure that there is proper recording of members who commit perpetrate domestic violence. And we then also recommended that joint visits should be conducted to look into the training. We have been struggling to set up a date because of other engagements, but we're hoping before the end of the financial year we would have undertaken this exercise, as I alluded to earlier. Third, management should develop process flowcharts on how to complete the register. Flowcharts and checklists have been developed, and these are aimed at enhancing the capacity to respond to frontline workers, including CSC and those on patrol. Now, the test list is a simple checklist which was also developed with assistance of civil society. It's a 10-point checklist, and it's encouraging to see that the SAPS is already putting that in place. We also recommended that the DVA register needs to be reviewed and updated with a specific focus on the last three columns of the register, because if the register, it was found to be unfriendly, but also it was very difficult to provide an update on the case as it progresses. And we believe that this register is being reviewed, and we will be informed as to when it's finalized. Now, in terms of challenges generally, we find that it's very difficult to ascertain the level of domestic violence in the country. However, research indicates that there are high levels of prevalence against of violence against women and children. One of the main challenges is that it makes it difficult to measure the extent of domestic violence in the country, because the domestic violence is not recorded it's not recorded in official crime statistics. What happens is that it's not regarded as a criminal offense at this age. It is normally associated with other criminal offenses, like assault or assault to the age or murder. So if an assault occurs, then what normally happens is that then the FAPH will then ascertain whether is that domestic violence related case, and then they will then indicate that in their system. But this is a challenge for us, because now we can't even determine how many arrests have been made in terms of domestic violence cases. Now, slide 33 talks about the research that has been undertaken by Lily and us, and talking with the issues that contribute to why is it difficult to ascertain the prevalence of domestic violence. Now, ever since we've taken over the monitoring of the DVA, there has been a significant drop in the number of non-compliant complaints against the FAPS. Now, this is not necessarily because the data is fully compliant, but it can be attributed to the fact that committees are not aware that they need to now report to the CFP instead of the ICT. Mm-hmm. Now, in order to mitigate that, we have developed promotional material that has been distributed to all provinces, and posters also sent to provincial offices, which were then distributed to some of the police stations. Now, these materials clearly indicate that from now on, the cases of DVA of non-compliance should be referred to the SFPS. I will skip the next slide. The slide number 36 talks about the fact that it is highly crucial that DSP, together with SAPS and civil society organizations, engage in the process that are aimed at empowering the victims of domestic violence and other gender-based violence and other gender-based violence crimes. And on the same tone, the FHS needs to strengthen its ability to respond to just general comments that we are observing. That the management of SAPS should strictly hold members accountable for poor compliance, and that failure to adhere to the duties as prescribed by the DVA constitutes misconduct, and it should be dealt with accordingly. Station commanders need to ensure that members within their command are continuously trained, and internal information sessions on DVA are held. Then high number of offenders that is members that are perpetrators of domestic violence is a concern, and still a major concern for us. And we wonder whether are these members also subjected to the EHW program within the organization. Reporting of non-compliance between SAPS and CFT needs to be strengthened. As I indicated earlier on, we haven't received non-compliance returns from the SAPS as the Act and the National Instruction stipulate, and we just need to make sure that the things are in place to ensure that these take place. We've also developed a standard operating procedure to address the implementation of recommendations on domestic violence, and also how these non-compliant complaints would be received within the organization. The SOP was consulted and received comments from the SAPS, and we have sent it back to the SAPS, I think about 8-9 months ago, and we still haven't received the final signed copy. This is crucial in that the structure also that we have at National, which is the compliance forum, can also be replicated at a provincial level once that SOP is signed. So the former Secretary of Police signed with this SOP, and it was referred to the SAPS, but we haven't received feedback in that regard, even though we have made numerous follow-ups. And we will then also undertake joint awareness raising campaigns with the SAPS, and release going to be part of the media plan that is being currently rolled out with the organization is to make the community aware of our roles in terms of the implementation of the CPA. Thank you.
Thank you for the presentation. I will allow my members to ask questions. Maybe the first issue I've raised during the briefing is the statistical basis of your report. Because, for instance, on page 8 and 9, if you only visited 4 stations in the Eastern Cape, 4 in KZN and 4 in the Western Cape, and you compare with the other provinces, the question is, how do you then correlate the national sample? Wouldn't it be more logical to say, well, if you look at the number of stations or the population per province, that would be your basis? Otherwise, you say this is now the national average compliance level based on 4 stations. Where's the portfolio committee visited 4 stations in this new term? 4 of those stations complied fully. There was no problem. So our statistical analysis is 100% compliance. But I mean, it's not a true reflection of the picture. So I think for future references, maybe to get the Secretary's view on that, we need a kind of spread where it reflects the number of stations per province relatively to the numerical reality. Otherwise, you've got a very skewed system and say, well, there's, you know, especially if your data is very much in smaller provinces, populate. And I've got a fundamental problem with that. So I think the statistical model in terms of monitoring should be reviewed. Just to ensure that you say, well, this is really the picture. Because if you only visit 4 stations in Eastern Cape, it's very difficult from that statistical base to make valid reduction. I'm concerned about that. Mm-hmm. So I think from a statistical point of view, I think talk to Stats HA, talk to colleagues in the research fraternity that get that right. So that we come maybe in the next cycle that there would be an even spread. Otherwise, it's not really the national average that you're talking about. Is maybe a picture to that. So we need a full picture. Let's go to the question. I will go from Honourable Molibasi down to Honourable Barna.
Sure, Deputy Chair. Why are staff members who are reported to be involved in GA cases, firearms, not free? Because this is against the Firearms Control Act of 2000. My next question is on the, you made mention of some key, having some VFR, the Female Block Empowerment Center could not be accessed because of non-availability to operate. What is your national structure saying on the issue of key? Does it mean only one key is different than somewhere? with that, having that key on him, what will happen? Will it be the end of that victim empowerment center? Or what? What is what Mr. Nishkasen saying on that? And the other issue is on the sending agenda of the station commander to discuss this in their lectures. What if they don't do it? Who follows this up to ensure that this is done? In your recommendations of the implementation, you recommend that CBA register must, for the three last columns, must be amended. Have you started already amending this, or is it in pipeline? And my other question is, what is the reason for skipping the slide 35 when you're editing your presentation?
Thank you. I think some of those questions ideally also for SEPs, so we will also expect that the National Commission will deal with that. Honorable Muller.
Thank you, Mr. President. My question is, what are you doing to solve for reduce drastically the number of withdrawal of cases? Number two, in slide 9, why is Mbombo not audited during October 2013 and March 2014? Number 3, what steps are you going to take in the Mpumalanga and Northwest provinces where both provinces received an average non-compliance score? Number 4, in slide 12, what did you do with those stations that have VFR but not compliance? Number 5, in slide 31, why domestic violence is not recorded as such in the official crime statistics? Thank you.
Other Mama Bija.
Thank you, Chair Person. I see on page 12 that when your report, you found out that out of 35 police stations, 14 did not have VFR. What were the reasons you got from those conversations? Why there is no conviction that you want? And secondly, we have on page 32 an indication that a criminal offense,
the
police were there when they applied to the process. Their budget reflected almost an 8% expense. And it is happening to establish to you that these facilities do not get to the police as much as the police is in there. Then if one asks whether where is the money going? Is it an issue of resources or a lack of will on the part of the police to comply with the requirements of the Act? I find that extremely odd. They came here and requested us to enable them to acquire an additional 3.3 billion to go and buy any others. Yes, that is cannot be us. I don't know where the deputy commissioner could assist us to understand what are the causes of this.
Thank you. I'll move on to the Senator.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I actually quite agree with your question as well. I mean, we don't have an idea what is happening in police stations in South Africa. We're talking about 155 actions for one period in sector. So I quite agree with you. Chairperson, my question is firstly, for instance, if you look at your slide, first, by the way, your total is incorrect. The complaint received is 20 and the total not 27. There were 3 cases where no steps have been taken. And I want to know what happened with those cases. So it was in April-September inspection period. So did you go back to those 3 cases or not? Secondly, what is the outcome of a disciplinary? We hear that disciplinary actions has been instituted and taken, but we don't know what were the steps. Is it, I need to tell you, listen, next time, please, if I ask the key, please give the key. I want to know what disciplinary actions have been taken. Then on your slide, the 15th chairperson, I can't believe that after 15 years, because this is a 1919 Act, promulgated, and I can't understand that after 15 years, we say that the DBA registered, there should be an additional column for updating information, reasons for no arrest, and details of investigation officer where a case has been opened. How is it possible? Those are basic needs. It's part of management. So this actually says that there is very poor management on the DBA register. My last question, Chairperson, is on the slide 58. You are referring to a standard operating procedure. I can again ask, after 50 years, you're coming up with a standard operating procedure that has to be signed by SAS. Firstly, what are these procedures and why is it not being signed yet? Just to say that it is awaiting finalization and signature from SAS management is not good enough, Chairperson. When was it submitted to management? That we have a specific date that we can find out how long is it to obtain a signature on standard operating procedures. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Philip, Honourable Bailey.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question is specifically on the issue of non-compliance findings. Because those big gaps between the data sets is quite striking. And I just want to get a little more clarity on whether that figure of 196 non-compliance cases, was the majority of that from the inspections done at the police stations and therefore finding sort of incorrect filling of the domestic violence register? Or are those complaints from the public coming to the secretariat to say, I was not handled correctly when I came to the police station, or this, that, or the other? So are they non-compliance findings and complaints coming to the secretariat or proactively found during the inspections at the police station?
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Honourable Caruana.
Thank you, Chair. Tell me what the actions are that are taken against provincial police commissioners when their stations in their own provinces are found to be non-compliant. I mean, that seems to be the root of this entire problem. There are never any repercussions when they treat the Domestic Violence Act with abject contempt. And it's gone on as long as I've been on this committee, and in fact it looks as though it's now worse, and compliance is worse than it was 6-7 years ago. Now, either a letter of reprimand for a month and they're filed and it's torn up. It's obviously not something that they're scared of. It's an irrelevance in their lives. And that's why we have this problem. You know, what we're seeing are victims who come into a station who are sent home. They're not recorded in the domestic violence register. Then what happens? The partner applies for a firearm license. They look in the register. His name is not there. He gets the firearm, goes home, and shoots her dead. And that happens over and over again because the SAC won't step up to the plate. They've never taken this act seriously. Also, I know we have the infamous 1,448 criminals convicted in the SAC. The SAC seems unable to get rid of them. They just can't bring themselves to boot them up. We now have lists of people, and this is a very small sample, just 74 members out of just 35 stations. So if we say, okay, that's two men in each station who beat up their wives and their children. And then you extrapolate that to the 1,137 stations in the country. We're talking about 2,300 odd men in our stats. And if they will beat up their women and children, they will beat up civilians, they will shoot people dead. It's a violence wreak in them. What are they doing in the stats? And I agree absolutely, have their firearms been taken away? If not, the statute is breaking the law. And it really is time. The line was drawn in the sand. Because year after year, we hear the same stories, and in fact now this research shows us the situation is far worse than it ever has been.
Thank you,
Thank you. That's the third round. We will ask Secretary to respond. There's issues also for SAS to respond. Over to the Acting Secretary.
Thank you very much for the operational one, and then I'm going to ask you to respond to the operational one, and then once you thank SAS for the support, and then the Secretary to respond to some of the issues that's done to the financial institution. With regards to the statistical modeling, I think Chairperson Sanders said that we need to review the property assignments, the property assignments and the assumptions, and taking into engagement with some actual data. Selections have been used in some past, in terms of the grammatical areas, the quality will be better, but in terms of the mathematical tools, it's not perfect, and obviously the following report will be enhanced for your information. Then also, with regards to increasing awareness, the manager had indicated that as on this month, we have media plans, and all of media plans. We have a road show to provinces, starting with KZN on the 11th of November, which is Eastern Cape on the 21st of November, we're doing Malanga on the 30th of December, and Western Cape on the 8th of December, and next year we have the next 36 of provinces. We've also done adverts in a few national publications that have high level of leadership. But and then we're also engaging community-based organizations as a vehicle for boosting the work of the Secretariat, and hopefully for encouraging people to feel more comfortable with raising complaints. Then also with regard to our collaboration with the South African citizens and with ACES, as per the recommendation of my very first interaction with the Equality Committee, there was the need for us to engage SACS around compliance in general and oversight in particular was there. Then it was with regard to good delivery companies. But I think the rules of values is also relevant. And we had the workshop, as you can see, by the group of the 21st of October. And out of that, we established a memorandum of understanding specifically between SACS and ourselves. And then the whole issue, the reason why the delay of the signing of SAS operating procedures is that it will then be integrated into the general memorandum of understanding. So already SAS has submitted a very high delegation that will work with us on the task team to concretize that memorandum of understanding. And between us, we have set the end of November as deadline. Listen, if you could just respond to the issues that is relevant to you, and then we can allow us to respond to the issues.
Okay. Thank you, Secretary. Most of the questions, I think that will then respond to in terms of why the firearms were not seized. What we do, remember, is that we could only make recommendations to the SAPS and then put accountability measures in place to ensure that the SAPS then reports back on the recommendations that we have made. And that is what the compliance forum is mainly utilized for. It's an accountability mechanism that we expect in place. So most of the questions that have been raised, the SAPS will provide response on. The national instruction is clear to say that a member needs to be dedicated to be responsible for the victim, the VFR, and it just needs, SAPS needs to ensure that the keys are always available. In terms of the GBA register, indications are that it's being based on the recommendation that we have made, because we've gone out, we've spoken to members, and we've analyzed the register and we came back and reported to the complaint forum, and the recommendations we've made today all are the ones that are being considered right now. But the SPS will then also provide us with an update in that regard. In terms of Light and Popo, we were not audited. The province indicated that they couldn't undertake DBA visits for that period, and the department had challenges in terms of resources, as it was under the management of Treasury, and they had to seize most of the activities that were planned for that period. Where the VFR is not utilized, again, steps will respond to that, to say it is existing but it's not utilized properly for the purpose that it's intended to. And also in terms of why it's not recorded as a criminal offense, we did present on this in the last financial year together with the SAPS in this regard. They also provide feedback and that regard. The reasons in terms of why there are no VFRs, as we indicated, to the stations we've been to, it was because there was lack of space in the police station. That's the only reason we found, but the SAPS could add on to that. And in terms of the outcomes, some of the outcomes we have received feedback in, of disciplinary cases that have been instituted, and some of them would be verbal warnings, sometimes written warnings, and there were instances where an exemption had to be applied for in this regard. But for the period ending March 2014, we still need to get feedback into the cases that have been assessed to the SAPS. The SOP, the SOP, what it attains is it talks to essentially the existence of the complex forum within the national sphere of government, and also how then it could be replicated at a provincial level. It also talks to how non-compliant complaints should be received and dealt with at a provincial, from a police station level to a cluster, to the province and to national. So it really outlines the process on how the recommendations and any issues that arise from the DBA should be dealt with. It also looks at disciplinary cases, how they should be handled, and it outlines the entire process. And as I indicated, that we have sent this comment, we received comments from the NCPS, and it were factored in into the final document. In terms of the date, we will then provide to the committee just before we leave today as to exactly when was the SOP signed and forwarded to the SAPS. The no compliance complaints from...
Sorry, just on that specific point. I also want to know why did we wait 15 years before we started with an SOP?
Yeah,
I think
I don't know, but
you've got a
just... Yeah, on the issue of space for VFRs being the reason for not having VFRs, I think reluctance also comes in this. There is also an issue of reluctance. Because one thing that is, some stations push up when the houses... and so on. They come up with other things just to have it. The issue of reluctance is key, yes, just tension.
Okay, let's continue the responses from
okay.
The CPU.
Thank you. In terms of the question raised by Honorable Fronovals, we have just taken over the implementation of the DAP less than 3 years ago. and our role is to identify gaps within systems in the SHS. And we realized that that was one of the issues that was leading to not being able to implement the DVA effectively that is within the SHS. And that is why we came up with the initiative to say, let there be a standard operating procedure that sets a uniform standard across, so that when you go from one province to the next, you almost expect the same kind of response and how things are dealt with. So I think the positive stuff, it just needs to be signed off and implemented. In terms of non-compliant complaints, these are complaints that are coming to the Secretariat for members of the public. Now, action taken when PCs are non-compliant, the LAPS will have to respond to that, because, as I said, we can only make recommendations to say we must institute disciplinary proceedings, but also to ensure that there is compliance to the act. Yeah, I think I've covered all the questions. Over to the executive.
Yeah, thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. The general plenary will take the functional questions, then I'll add the strategic resources. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Okay, on why RPs and the sign-ups are seen, we would need to get from the Secretariat and from the Provincial Secretariat, we usually get also a report, a case by case report, where you can track the specific cases of the members that were accused and then we follow up on why the firearms were not seized, if they were supposed to be seized. Every case would be different, and in some cases we found there were people who didn't have a firearm issue credential, the reason the firearm wasn't seized, so they didn't have a firearm issue. But in other cases, we then ensure that firearms are seized. We need to follow up on every individual case with that particular member to determine why that wasn't done and ensure that should be done. Then, in terms of the disciplinary rooms, that are there's a couple of questions in relation to disciplinary rooms. I'm just going to deal with them together. The instruction does provide for the first of all, for every session to have written a common co-ordinator, but for the key to the disciplinary room to be available and finished servicing 24/7, and the key must be handed over when every relief commander hands over the TSC to the next relief commander. That key must be handed over with the relief. And we find that doesn't happen, they leave the key with the coordinators in some cases. We've issued a reminder and engaged the public to ensure that the systems put in place for that key to be handed over. It cannot be with one person, it must be accessed at all times in the city. So again, that is something that we need to get those details. We again follow up with each of the provincial commissioners in that regard. The PSCs must also ensure that the VFRs are managed, and others will command to make sure that it's clean, that it's available, that members are not abusing it. So again, those are issues that we raised from the Secretary, the details of the particular station, so we can follow that up. Where the stations have received for its assistance to set on the VFR, whether that is a room in the station, a park, a facility, or a warehouse, and they're not using it for that purpose. Again, when we get that information, we follow up, we correct that. Unfortunately, we're not correct after the fact, but the instructions, our national instruction is very clear, that they are not allowed to use the VFR for this fact, especially when it was provided for that purpose in the form of, for instance, a park. But there are instances where stations for instance, that are rented or leased are in like an urban area, simply do not have the space on their ground. I think we saw a way to make an offer, for instance. That station is very limited space. It doesn't have enough space for in its ground or in the space itself for its manager. So that also comes into the issue of devolved stations and non-devolved stations. Not all the stations that we have will allow us to set up for entities of our facility and connect up to the box. But that is the system. We're actually working with police supply chain managers through that at the moment and trying to ensure that each of our stations make provision for supporting victims. In some cases where they can't set aside a dedicated facility only used for victims, we try to ensure that they put into a station order where they identify an office or officers that can be used for private intervention victims if that is necessary.
So that might mean an office of the detective, sometimes it's even a station commander. So we basically make a station order to, if we need to make deal with a private injury, this is how we go to it. We call it and we set an alternative arrangement. So where they don't place for a facility, they make an alternative arrangement that there is a provision of private key of the victim. The issue also of the patients that do not yet have, I think that that has obviously it is an issue of space, but it is also a situation where we're working with assistance from patient management, we're working with all the patients to make provision for a facility that, that can set aside that space. There is a lot of improvement that has been made in that regard, and we've managed to increase the number of facilities last year as a result of especially the part-time facilities made available by pain management. The changes to the domestic violence register, we have started with the changes to register, and doesn't just affect one register. I think the committee members will know as we engage the session, but there's a lot of documentation and registers that link to each other. So when we make changes to one register, it also impacts some of our other citizen procedures. So we, as part of the review of the national instruction, looking at redesigning some of the registers, basically making sure that we have new tools that are duplicating the old tools. So we need to basically move one tool when exactly we're coming up. So there's a whole process to review the registers and the national instructions currently in place based on the recommendations made by the Secretariat, but also some of the findings we've made ourselves. The station lectures discussion, there has been a certain issue that stations must ensure that in their station lectures they discuss findings. They must, if it's followed up by the first level infections by the station commander and his commander, it's also followed up by the cluster commander and their staff in terms of the station and cluster management framework that puts in place very specific requirements for certain second level inspections. We also follow that up in our visit at the national office and by the national inspector. The stations, the vehicles that are not utilized are not utilized, so again, we get the details and follow that up, and we need to take the energy in measures to correct that. Why domestic violence is not reported as such? There is two forms of reporting domestic violence to the Act of Case. One is when a criminal case opens, it's reported as the crime that has been defined. So if it would be defined as a common assault, it would be reported on the crime administration system as a common assault. But the crime administration makes provision for us to identify that common assault case as related to domestic violence. There's a specific field where you need to say if it's domestic violence related or not. So for any crime type, as defined in our crime definition, when we report that case, we have to answer is this domestic violence related or not. So we can give an indication of all crime types, what is the percentage that are related to domestic violence or not. But it's not reported as domestic violence, but as the crime that was committed in the context of domestic violence. And that could be assault, it could be sometimes economic crime, as well as the crime. But we are also registering specific statutory offences defined in terms of domestic violence acts. So we usually refer to the statutory offences and the common law offences in terms of domestic violence. The difficulty with that is that you do need to record the crime type as well. So you want to, if we record it only as domestic violence, we don't know what is a murder, an attempted murder, or assault case, or criminal injury. So that's why there's a crime type registered on that, but we link it to domestic violence. The SAP came as an initiative from the Secretariat when they took over the responsibility for monitoring the domestic violence act from the ICD, so it's really used in the country, as I think Ms. Kutcher has indicated. We have circulated the draft SAP to our provinces to get to work with provinces through the SAP because it impacts on provincial commissioners and their relationship with the provincial Secretariat for safety as well. We have again received the updated SOP with the changes made after the initial discussion. We are now again revisiting the revised one with our provincial stakeholders, but we're also taking it up with the review of the national instruction, and it has implications for other projects in the police as well. This is in the broader context of our management of complaints and our relationship with the Secretariat. We are basically revisiting and making sure that SOP does not contradict anything else and is basically providing for
standard operating relationship between such and secretariat in terms of the domestic violence plan. So we're obviously finalizing that so that the SFP can be signed off. But it's quite a more complex process to look at standard operating procedures and arrangements between the provincial commissioners of the secretariat, the national office, and also in fact on other divisions like the human resource management and the social system in that. Thank you.
Like you
were saying,
it's not on that side.
Yeah, so I just have a two things before we get on one of the answers. I'm extremely uncomfortable with the answer that was given in terms of the 74 members who, SAPS officers who were found to be accused of domestic violence. This was only a taste of the station, 135 stations, and yet the SAPS member now says, oh, we wait to hear from the civilian secretariat which of the SAPS members have now been accused or found guilty of domestic violence. I can't believe there is not a system whereby each station who has a convicted abuser, that's not handed upwards and is not told to the top structure in the province and in the country. We're talking about nearly 2,500 potential abusers if one extrapolates the figures. And here we're saying, are we waiting for the civilian secretary to test? But they've only been to 135 stations. So for the rest, we're not going to hear. There's got to be a system, surely, where someone feeds the information upwards and someone does something about it. Basically, it seems that doesn't exist.
No, I think it's an important point that we raised that in the DRR hearings as well with the delegation. But that's a question of the role of the cluster commanders and the provincial commissioners. Because we believe SAP should take the initiative. Although the secretariat plays an oversight role and they must do their job in terms of the act, the SAPs must lead with an example. So your station commander must make sure if there's a member that's errant in your station, must deal with it. Otherwise, what is the purpose of the cluster commanders? And I think the big issue, we also raised previously, and the ages also commented on with regard to the other matters, is the question of the role of the provincial commissioners. Mm-hmm. Are they going to the clusters? Are they dealing with those issues? So I think there's a serious concern from the committee side whether there's that appropriate close management. Maybe the Deputy National Commissioner should come in. He said he will deal with strategic issues. So this is a very strategic management issue.
Thank you very much. Yeah, President, maybe I just need to start with the reporting part of the disciplinary outcomes. It's part of the disciplinary management system, which applies to all cases that are subjected to discipline. They are reported to national via all the levels, including domestic violence. Mm-hmm. The only thing we do is just to isolate domestic violence because it's part of the priority reporting. But we not necessarily seeking information from secretariat. As and when secretariat have conducted a monitoring exercise, and in terms of the current arrangement between us and them, we share that information immediately and we act on it. But we do have a standing procedure. We just got a system within us that is with it. And on the same breath, Jefferson, I also wanted to speak to the actions against the provincial commissioners. I can only say at present moment, in terms of the performance management system, which provided for with us, provincial commissioners are held accountable to the national commissioner and they appear before the performance evaluation. And part and parcel of the performance priorities that they are counting on is domestic violence. And domestic violence has been embodied in the whole of the sub-performance management system right from the lowest level. If there's a station that is not compliant with domestic violence, during the evaluation of the provincial commissioner, it will come out up there. And then the national commissioner then takes the relevant corrective action that is against the provincial commissioner. And we also then have inspections which include the combined palliative assurance which has been introduced by the National Commissioner. Those inspections, they have domestic violence and some of the other high priorities which include fire and others, but I would at the moment focus on domestic violence as a priority. Those inspections, they become explicit in terms of the findings and recommendations based on domestic violence. And we use those inspections, inspection reports, to also undertake relevant action and also take corrective measures. And Chairperson, we do have a domestic, a national implementation framework on domestic violence. And as we've also started engaging more closely with the civilian secretary in terms of the recent approach, we have aligned this implementation framework to the civilian secretary plan, which is the monetary one. And more specifically, we are also trying to make optimal use of the compliance forum, which then links us to this implementation plan. What we then have provided for is a service delivery improvement framework that talks to this implementation framework. With a service delivery improvement framework, we're picking up issues, especially such as the two problems which have been highlighted, and I think they've been raised very questions. We immediately then get into special service delivery plans, which we would also refer to as recovery plans, and prioritize all the issues and the shortcomings in those particular provinces. But then in these two provinces, they are going to be singled out for special reporting, which will be very short term. And we are also going to share that with the secretariat. We will also agree how we're going to maybe share the development as far as these particular sessions are concerned. There's other areas, Chairperson, like the issue of the peace. She has responded to it. But I also just wanted to say, this is part and parcel of command and control standing procedures. And whenever there's violation, it also demands relevant action. But what we're discussing and what we want to move to with Secretariat, that there's certain of the issues that require action immediately, that does not necessarily even need to go to a report. They may go to a report, but we want to share with them, like for instance, if they go to a police station, they can't find the key to the victim's family room. They cannot see the hearing and get an initial instruction because it also retards their work if they can't get to that. We will establish such a also type of communication because I think at the present moment we are at a very high level in dealing with that. The same includes firearms which have not been seized, even misconduct, if they have not been seized. But I think the last thing that could be right, it should not be as expected that for each case of domestic violence there will be a firearm confiscated because we do not issue firearms to everyone. It's only when this is an operational person and his or her work requires of him or her to carry a firearm. In such cases, then we follow it up. But in terms of our own processes from here and from this report, we will go back at us and go and do a first finding because we do have the laws. And where possible, we will also share with Secretariat fresh issues so that we're able to deal with them. We will also then undertake a review of our implementation framework, especially on our service delivery improvement plan. And by next time we come to the police, to the protocol committee, I think it would be better. And what we appreciate from Secretariat is that the gap between us and them has been closed to a great extent. Thank you very much.
Right, I'll give another round. We're just moving along, we've got a long day, but maybe just two issues for the Secretariat. Do you got enough resources to deal with the EBI Act? Currently, and do you get the necessary cooperation from the various provinces? Because if I go to slide 16 and 17 in terms of non-compliance, there's only one or two provinces that really reports. Now the question is, what happens in the other provinces? That's a big concern.
So it means that members of the public do not have access or the confidence. So they deal with that. But let's start from that side. Honorable Bana, then Honorable Frenabal, Honorable Ben, sorry, and then Swala. There we go.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to talk for a moment about protection orders. Women go into a session and are frequently, as we saw from the research, frequently just told go to the magistrate's office, and they don't record them in the domestic violence register. But if they do, and if there's a protection order granted, the SAPs are then expected to take the protection order to the abuser. Now, there have been cases where SAPs members have refused to go into informal settlement. I followed one in particular. I was asked to assist, and in the final analysis, the SAPs did not give this protection order to the abuser, and the abuser went back into the informal settlement, kicked in the door, beat the woman to death in front of her baby. This is what happens. It's the logical outcome of the process is not being followed. But why are we having situations where SAPs members feel they have the right not to go into informal settlement? These are not no-go areas. There's no such thing in this country. And I was extremely concerned about that. I've experienced it twice in KwaZulu-Natal. I don't know if it happens elsewhere. But I'm concerned listening to this report that that may actually be the situation.
The other dimension of the whole Domestic Violence Act implementation that concerns me is on the parts of the service members themselves who are dealing with cases when a victim comes to reports, and the kind of stories they would hear and the kind of trauma that they on a secondary basis are then exposed to. So in the inspections that the Secretary does, is there an element of checking whether those designated service members also receive counselling, to sort of shore up their capacity to maintain that role? Otherwise, I would imagine after a while, you just get sort of depleted. We'll always have to deal with these kind of dramatic cases. And if you're finding it's not being done, can the service please inform the committee what specific measures they have in place to ensure that? Because in as much as we certainly want to insist on strong capacity in the service to fully comply with the Domestic Violence Act, it also there's a very big human element in that, and the human element does need to be nurtured.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, two simple questions. The first one is, can the Secretariat tell us how do they make a decision to go and do an inspection in a specific police station? Just that one? How do they make that decision? To the chairperson, when it comes to firearms, if a member or an operational member who needs a firearm, if a firearm has been seized, what happens to that member? For instance, he or she can't do the work any further. Is that member then reissued? What is happening with that specific person? Because the member cannot be operational as normal. I want to know what happens. And on that same issue, I want to know, do we have any case where a member where the firearm was supposed to be seized hadn't been seized, and that there was further violence, or that the firearm, for instance, was used either for a murder or anything? Thank you.
Honourable Clara, is your question answered?
No. Thanks, Chair. Sorry. The deputy police commissioner kind of sidestepped my question. The question was very simple. The acts came into effect 15 years ago. And over a period up now, there has been money that applied to enable the acts to be fully implemented and resourced. The issue around compliance talks into the failure on the part of the police to make sure that compliance in relation to creating an enabling environment through which the act can be applied. At least
representing Charles in the home of the facility that ought to be at each and every conversation. Now, the report alludes to the letter of, and this is the question that I was putting to you. Why this inaction and failure to comply with it? What happens to the money? Well, then 98% is spent in the world, but that's substance. So, Honorable Chair, there's been a legislation to the fact that the previous preparators held workshops, facilitated dialogues. What were the theme of this dialogue? And what were the expected outcomes? Because see, if you talk domestic violence, it's really an issue that derives from a number of variables. Now, if you engage with struggles of civil society, I would be very keen to know what is the first, if and what are the potential output or what has been the output
of the
Thanks.
Other one, teacher?
Thank you, Chair. According to how I understand most of the things in this extended report, it gives me an expression that interests me that starts explaining the matters of the country. Why I'm saying that this is a justice that this case shows. There are a lot of things that we do not expect. If we have competent people who are managing stations and competent even at national level. So it gives me an impression that work is not being done as expected by us who make policies and actions and etc. And therefore, I should think we need to understand the modus of the branding of us working for the budget. Because when we are featured here, we are not featured here to see who has more reasoning powers to be cogent enough for politicians to just say yes, yes, yes. We are waiting for the people. If we can check on page 33, there's been a study done by us that indicating why the difficulty in assessing the prevalence of domestic violence. There's been circulated there. And you find some of them there as things that show that there's no monitoring. People, police stations are just doing as they wish. Because one of them is a tendency on the part of policies to refer domestic violence cases directly to the magistrate court only to get for the victim to get control of. What does it have to do? Why can't the police station deal with the issue? Because taking this position order, at times they put those victims at risk to be killed. And most of the people who are being killed due to those protection orders is ourselves as women. And most of the leadership in the police stations, national, provincial, and local are men. So it means men do not care about us as women, and we got here in particular. But should we not take care of us? We will not protect us. What do we, if I can say, it's like I'm under an impression that you are not an election. Because your implementation of what we expect from you, it's not proving a good result. As for that, it's not conscious. Because what you see on the ground, it's what you write this. There are so conscious and there are so, you know, you report.
as even in the actual exception. You will answer absolutely and cogently. And your friends are mixed up because what you say, the English you speak and how you put your words, it doesn't correlate with what is happening to our community. Things are becoming worse and worse and worse. And we are busy giving you more budget, more budget, more budget. Because you are not satisfied on the ground. Or maybe because you are not doing what we expect you to do, that's why you don't see that things are becoming worse. Domestic violence is becoming less than the crime. So please set us that question for this month. Do as expected. Let's prove the project that we are working for them. Even if we are not real politicians. But we need to implement what we expect you to be implemented. If I've been too much, I'm sure that I should think, you heard what I'm saying.
Thank you.
That's the gist of what I'm saying.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Jefferson. I've got two questions. Can the Secretariat indicate whether that specific program in its employee health and wellness program in place to assist the members to deal with their aggression and not take it out on their partner? Number two, why is this progressive like cases and VBS? So this is only for savings in flight a very strategy.
Yes, Chair. The group of a review will that review include SAPS and OA funds? My next question is on the slide 15, map out with two comments against members, but zero excellent proceedings. What happened there? My next question is to the acting secretariat. The spoke of roadshows and awareness. You can have roadshow after roadshow and awareness after awareness. But are they yielding the MDK's results? My next one is, can a member whose firearm was seized get it back at some stage? When I'm asking this question, some 2 weeks ago, I was called by a woman crying. She's the wife of a senior staff member. She was heavily killed by the husband sometimes, and the firearm was seized. Now, she was told the husband is getting back the firearm. Can that happen? Question.
Thank you, Mr. Ferrant. We will have the final responses because we'll have to move to the other four very important reports. We must also deal with a very important firearm matter as well, Firearms Act. So let us give the Secretary and the SAPS an opportunity to respond.
Thank you. I just want to emphasize that we take comments from the portfolio committee very, very seriously. And we appreciate the guidance from the portfolio committee with regards to ensuring that SAPS knows the matters better and that we create an effective oversight mechanism to support SAPS in execution of their responsibilities. With regards to the statement that SAPS is failing the matters, I'll be fearful to make that conclusion just on the basis of this report. Because as I had indicated earlier, the sample methodology is not necessarily the best methodology, but there is merit in the reasoning that informs the selection of the police stations, and I'm going to allow this committee to say what was the initial intent when they selected the specific police stations. But for us to elevate it to a level where we can make decisions of national implication without being very certain about the methodology, I'll be reluctant to go that route. But I'll also allow that to respond. because indeed the issue of domestic violence is very serious, and we have to find the mechanism of tracking compliance with CBA. But before we go there, I'm just going to ask Minister to speak to exactly what methodology we use and why in province is bigger for him in Natal, they only have four police stations. And then from our side, if we have identified repeat offences with regards to police in particular, in the respect of domestic violence and sexual and counselling. And then I know that SASTRAP have a very well program. From our side, we can comment on how effective we think it is, and then SASTRAP can also expand on it. And then with regards to the awareness, whether it is yielding the necessary results, I think it is because we haven't really rolled out the program yet, it is very difficult for us to be able to assess the impact there are. We've had a really, or our approach to the awareness is very comprehensive, in that we also, as I discussed earlier, we engage in community-based organizations, and particularly we're doing on the whole thing to drive the community police forum, and then we're also going to be using community organizations and grassroots community newspapers. So, and then maybe after 6 months, we'll be able to assess the impact. In respect of capacity, the unit would be best able to assess. In terms of skills and competence, the high level of skills and competence within the unit, the number of people in the unit, however, could be increased, and that would just be wrapping up our next work study. And the work study has indicated that services capacity could be enhanced. With cooperation from provinces, indeed, the cooperation initially wasn't optimal. In the past 7 weeks, we've had almost 4 activities that required the engagement of provinces. And at each of those activities, different activities, the attendance of the provinces was very high at the senior level. So we're hoping that cooperation will be improving as time goes on. Then, there was one more question. Oh, the dialogue. So if Ms. Kitch can also say what exactly was the purpose of the dialogue and what was its outcome, and yes, if it was effective or not.
Thank you, Shakrutin. Thank you, Shah. In terms of capacity, just to answer what the Secretary has indicated, is that a decision was made by the agency forum within the organization to say a minimum of 4 stations had to be audited per quarter, per province, including national. Hence, you see others stick to 4, others then undertake more stations based on what the MEC office has also identified as problematic stations. But in terms of the criteria we utilize is that we get information from the SACS inspectorate on poor performing stations, and we will utilize that. And also we look at, from our own data, which stations are performing poorly with regard to performance in general, but also DVA in particular. We then ensure that those are then audited so as to improve their compliance levels. In terms of the effectiveness of the EHW, we haven't really undertaken a study to look into that area, and we take note of that. We will ensure that it is part of our processes. In terms of capacity, yes, I think I've addressed that. Also, you find that the decision for the 4 was based on the fact that the secretariats are at different levels. others that isn't being established, others have already been established, and those that are established hence are undertaking more of it than others. All we had to ensure was to build capacity through training and making sure that systems are in place. The dialogue on improving policy response towards addressing issues of violence against women and girls in particular arose because of the scourge or the incidents that had taken place within the country. For instance, the case of Annie Boyson, where she was brutally raped and murdered. We felt that we needed to provide a platform where different stakeholders could come together. Now, the purpose of the dialogue was to ensure that there is integration from the highest level of government to the lowest layer within government, and to ensure that we coordinate efforts systemically within these spheres. We took note of the fact that there are initiatives that have been initiated at national, especially through the Gender Council, and that an implementation plan or program of action has been put in place. We basically just built on that, but since our focus is to monitor the SAPS, we felt that we needed to ensure that we strengthen policing at a local level based on an integrated approach. And hence, then we drafted a manifesto on how to improve policing response at a local level. And I indicated that manifesto was launched in the Northern Cape 2 months back, and we've put structures in place, and we will then be monitoring that process to ensure that there is coordinated effort, but the specific focus to try and address the issues of gender-based violence. Because the Act has been in implementation for 15 years, and we're still sitting in the same position as we were 15 years back. So we had to come up with different initiatives to say, then how do we then start? We know what the problems are. We have enough data. You will notice that the report will start to look the same. But as an oversight structure, we thought that we needed to come up with an innovative or start to come up with innovative solutions to try and address this stage. And hence, we also got copies of the manifesto, and we will then also circulate to those to members. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Seth,
anything from you?
Yes, thank you very much. Let me start by apologizing for citing the question by the honourable member. And I will start by going directly to it. There's two categories of police stations that we're building. Both of them, when we build, our first priority is that there should be a victim-friendly support center. We have the devolved group and the non-devolved group. The devolved group of stations, they result directly under us and other stations that we budget for. And that budget is transferred to us from public works and is managed by us. And then all the police stations that we build under that budget, they are the devolved stations. This is the budget that we've utilized 98%. But then there's a number of stations that still result under public works. Those stations, there's a number of them that are still outstanding. And they are being established according to the public works building program. We do not have control over them. So that is why we will have used our budget 98%, but we still have stations without victim-friendly support. It belongs to that backlog, on a number of occasions we call to account to the Kuru committee on the delay in the filling of police stations. And this particular matter was raised, but it ended up being taken up by the National Commissioner with the DG of Public Works. That situation is improving, but we are working on it. There's also another question that I might as well step again, Chairperson. It's the one on the withdrawal of cases. I think firstly, each and every member of the public has got a right to open a case, proceed with a case, or withdraw a case. Usually, it's not very much in the control of police, but when we look at a trend of this happening, we also begin to engage that with the criminal justice system because we meet with the prosecution and justice. And then suggest that although this case, there's a view to withdraw it, but let it go up to the level of prosecution and the prosecution has decided. That's what we are opting for within domestic violence by now, because that rate of withdrawal is very high. Some of them, they do open it today in the evening and tomorrow morning is withdrawn. Okay, so we are trying to put that mechanism within the criminal justice system. But I just also want to add to what the head of secretariat has been saying with regard to awareness, and we're calling for the support of all citizens in the country with regard to the awareness. Firstly, we have established a community policing strategy. And the one of the key deliverables to a community policing strategy is community education and awareness. And part of community education and awareness is awareness on domestic violence. There's other issues relating to other root causes of crime that we also load into this particular program. But then again, we also have a service charter. And that's where we need the most support, because with the service charter, we allow the community to evaluate the service that we render to them so that we can respond immediately in case we have shortfalls in delivering up to 11 before we reach the stage of failure. So, as part and parcel of the education and awareness, we are also educating the communities on these service charters. And we also provide them the opportunity to indicate to us this is the type of service that we will need vis-a-vis that is the current situation. Over and above that, we also have a national crime prevention strategy process that we driven in all 9 provinces. We also address executive councils so that we can be able to deal with the root causes of crime. I think within domestic violence, there's also certain interrelated factors which are faced as root causes, and that's what we would relate to social ills that also need to be dealing with. That also requires community education and awareness. So we also deal with root causes of crime, and if there's any root causes that relate to domestic violence, we also load them into that particular program. The last question said, Chairperson, is on the protection orders. I think firstly we've noted this one seriously. Despite the fact that we do have areas where there's no roads and there's no infrastructure, new areas, we still instruct police to go and do policing in those areas. Even if they have to park a vehicle, walk on foot, because we do have areas like that, they still go and do policing in those particular areas. Any refusal to go there, we take it as serious misconduct. And what has been reflected by the honorable member, we're taking it very serious, and we're going to follow it up. Then there was a question, what happens to a member whose firearm has been seized? I think firstly, whenever the firearm of a member is seized, and function where the member is deployed requires the firearm, the member is immediately redeployed. So that is first step. There's other steps that are being followed which could end up leading to a board of witness, whether this member can still continue with serving church. But the first step is the member is redeployed from that organization. State presidency is an investigator. We cannot expose that member continually in terms of that function, because it would even also be dangerous for him or her to execute an arrest without a firearm. Then there was also another question relating to a senior member whose firearm is intended to be returned back. But the question was, is this allowed? They say no. Unless the matter, because there are certain domestic violence cases that are disposed of in court, and there's then a court ruling, maybe that this member's firearm should be returned because the matter has been concluded. Except in such an instance, it cannot happen, and I would like to say it will not happen until the time that matter is disposed of within the legal process. And if we would like to follow up on this particular case so that we are able to address it as a matter of agency. Then the other question was referred to Secretariat on members of SWAT exposed to ESW. I just wanted to confirm that yes, there is an ESW program, and there's quite a number of members who are going through this particular program, and there's various other programs in which these members are exposed to in order to try and alleviate this particular problem. I want to believe, Chairperson, that I might not have asked any other better question. If I did so, I want to apologize in advance. I'll still be willing to respond to that particular question. And we also apologize for maybe failing the masses. But we also receive acknowledgement and appreciation as police. And they also come from masses. The only difference between the two is that maybe in certain instances we do not live up to their expectations, but there are instances where we exceed their expectations. Thank you.
Right, thank you, Mimis. We have to, we've got four other presentations still to do.
I understand, Chairperson, but my question has not been answered. I've asked a specific question. Do we have any case where a firearm was supposed to be seized that has not been seized and where a further...
If we might be can receive that in writing by next week.
Okay.
Is that done?
Yeah.
Right, thank you, honourable members. Thank you, delegation. We come to the end of this presentation. Making a few remarks. First, the next NDA report is due. That's the April to September 24th report. So we just don't know when it's going to be tabled. But it's quite important that I think in the next engagement, we must also invite the provincial commissioners,
yeah,
and we also have to invite DPW, that we can get a sense on what is actually going on in terms of the physical side and in terms of performances, and that we also, the members of the various provinces, can raise those questions. Then we will also ask the research division from Parliament to look at the DVA Act in terms of the recommendations. Shouldn't it be compulsory, and should we come with maybe amendments to strengthen the DVA. It's quite critical that this piece of legislation be executed in a proper way. I think there's positives of today's interaction. The Secretariat, the new energy, ensuring that we move forward and we close the gaps. I think it's also very positive. There's, at last, good cooperation in terms of between SAPS and Secretariat going forward, that there is the address of those issues, and that's also very positive. But it's quite critical in terms of going forward that, and I think that's the big issue, the NDP must be implemented as soon as possible. Because in terms of the NDP, we need a new member. We don't need members in SAPS.
that are, you know, perpetrators of violence against women and crime. We don't need incest. We don't need people who's involved in firearms accidents in part of sex. We don't need that. We need a new member. And the entity makes provision for a new code of conduct. I think that is part of the process going forward, that we ensure that the women and children in the country are properly serviced, and if there's complaints, that they're properly listened to. So I think we have to monitor closely on this committee side how do provinces deal with that, how do cluster commanders deal with that, so that we can get the necessary change in outcomes. Because we need the police service that is trusted by the community. There's one final issue. If the chefs can reply to us before next Tuesday, there was one mention, there was mention this morning of an incident that appeared at Mokala Queen in Popo about possible irregular conduct by chefs. So if we can just maybe have a status report on that by next Tuesday, that would be appreciated. So members, we're going to break for 10 minutes and then we come back for the other briefings from the secretary. Thank you for supporting.
Gracias. I'm
was relating on the attitudes and practices of our site speaker. In this regard, we set a meeting with the deputy of Peter on the 12th of November. So we hope that that meeting will lead to result in a lot more positive action. And then with regards to human resources, the internal human resource policies and balance, which is to add a line to the GPSA policies, and we are currently having another organizational review through the Navier department, so just the same either, and a new staff policy being developed. So with regards to the section six, the function of the Secretariat and the establishment of competencies and capabilities. So already, coordinates in the Secretariat was established, the Policy and Research Unit, the Monitoring and Evaluation Unit, the Partnership Unit, and the Legislation Unit. And as indicated, that was based on an organizational review and additional personnel was appointed, but now we're doing a further work study to ensure that we have the necessary capabilities or capacities to implement the responsibilities assigned to us under the Act. We've developed our strategic plans and our annual performance plans, and annual performance plans finalized and presented to Parliament. All the staff have signed with performance agreements and now we're in the process of performance reviews as to the GPSA requirements. The capacity of systems for monitoring and evaluating compliance with regards to the GPSA, and we've engaged ICER and our Oversight Monitoring and Evaluation Unit is providing GPSA compliance reports to Parliament, which we discussed this morning. We've also prepared capacity and systems workers with regards to monitoring flexibility to receive and deal with complaints. Currently, it's not optimal. We engage with discussions with the presidency around designing uniform business processes around service delivery complaints. And last meeting, we said that there is a one-stop shop. So we were going to have a workshop in October, but now it was supposed to happen, but it's going to be early in February. We've given the date to the presidency. And I think the proposed date is the 6th and 7th of February. With regards to Section 7 and 12, the appointment of the Secretary, I was appointed to act and process at the time in the closing date was the 31st of October. And so the appointment process for according to the Public Service Act. And the appointment will be finalized in consultation with Cabinet. So the deadline and the management of that process is being done by the Ministry, and Secretariat is not involved then. In respect of Section 10, that is really lagging. We haven't yet finalized the delegations, and we're hoping that we'll finalize by the end of November, pending the appointment of the Secretary. Because that delegation will have to be signed between the Secretary and the Minister. With regards to Section 13 and 34, the Secretary will submit quarterly reports to the Minister and the Parliamentary Committee. So we've designed a reporting structure template for quarterly reports, and currently we compile. So today we're tabling on the terms of the week integrated, so first and second quarter report. Section 15, the Secretary should prepare an annual report. So we've done our first annual report. It was not quite a low one because it wasn't audited, but for the next financial year, it will be a proper annual report that will be audited by the Auditor General. Section 16, 17, 18, 19, and 22 with regards to provincial secretaries. Provincial secretaries are being constituted in all the provinces, but not all of them are at the same level of implementation. The provincial plans are aligned with regards to customized indicators. As I indicated in the past 6-7 weeks, we've had a number of relations with provinces, and amongst them was the provincial party structure to review and approve, and also customize indicators. and the ritual is the secretaries for access and then Sally to the server appointed. So, according to the ritual, secretaries are performing their duties and executing the sanction. So, currently, we are interacting with Sally to ensure that the appointment of the provincial secretaries is expedited, and even there, that process is managed in collaboration with the ministry, given that the secretary is just acting for now. With regards to sections 23 and 25, secretary and provincial departments meet at least on a quarterly basis, so that is the first or with the regularly. And the next editing meeting is scheduled for late in November. The section 25-2, the senior management forum will be silent. It hasn't happened at all. And this is because we don't have provincial for the previous year. Section 27, minutes. The minutes are taking place as scheduled. We had a special minutes for the release of the crime thesis, and the next Monday is scheduled to happen on the 6th of December. Section 31 and 32, operation with ICES. It's addressed in the draft regulations, and then we had the oversight workshop about the 31st, and it was the 24th. And then also, the draft team was established to develop a memorandum of understanding between SAC and the secretariat, and then the consultative meeting between ICER and the secretariat was requested by the chairperson of the board, or reminded, emphasized by the chairperson of the board for the committee in our last meeting, so that one is now scheduled to take place next week. With regards to section 33 of the regulations, we've prepared the draft regulations and we're going to discuss them each day in the meeting. With regard to section 34, transitional provisions, the secretary is regular, so the support on the establishment of the provincial secretariat at the quarterly HOT forum.
Thank you very much. I think it's been also with mid-year review. I mean, most of the mid-year review information already received, but I think if we can go through that, you know, high level, then we will offer that to the dishes.
Next one. Presentation for the media review. Set our stuff around. You could get out, you have some hard copies around and put it back. So the purpose of the presentation is to propose the board for the committee on the programmatic support for board of the surveillance of the leaders for the period of September 2014 against the 2014 political scheme AT. And then also we thought it would be prudent for us to keep the portfolio committee a first indication of what the priorities are going to be and for the end of the calendar year. And then also to report on the extension for the first quarter of the year. Besides, we can understand the main actions and generation as we got. And our presentation doesn't unfortunately only get to consider, but we appreciate the guidance that we get from the portfolio. So I'm now going to allow Mr. Zimmel to speak to intersectoral coordination and strategic partnership.
Thank you, honorable members, I would like to touch on the handbook and issues. Slide 4, we would like the honorable members to note that the the targets we have been met except for the number of the working out committee, working out committee heads. The reason that what happened was the university raised concerns because we were approaching the election to be coming in the third quarter, in the second quarter, and they said there were some of them said that maybe we're doing this as part of campaigning, government campaigning coalition, and we then agreed with them that maybe we should postpone the actual signing of the agreement on the stolen goods campaign as well as the issue of sexual abuse within the campus. On slide 5, I would like to note, honourable members, to note that the assessment on sector policy in the last indicator there, we are not going to proceed with that as a unit because our M&E unit performs a similar function. On slide 6, particularly on the issue of assessment on social crime prevention, honourable members, we recall that the main reason why we, in our report, we raised the issue of the agreement with civil society and other institutions is so that we can involve them in crime prevention activities. Now, a number of issues that we highlighted in these assessments, we'll just highlight four. We've noted that there is still a concern that the service do not report back, the police service do not keep the affected victims, if one way to put it that way, informed on the progress of the cases. Even though we're still at an EDA level, we think that we raise this with our leadership within the institution because we think it might appear that it's a minor item to receive an SMS, but the impact could be quite big in terms of accountability, also alleviating the pain of those affected by crime, but it could also motivate the relevant people who investigate it. You see, if you know that the deadline is coming, you remember to follow up on issues, but also it could at least be the relevant commander if there is schedule, and we know that regularly SMSs must be sent, and then there's a schedule, and the commander says, if you send, just referring to the SMS itself, actually reminds the person who must perform the job to follow up, and therefore, if there are witnesses in the system broadly, be it resources or otherwise, those could attend it because then the relationship they say why there's no progress on this. But we think that issue itself is a critical issue that we need to raise with our leadership within our institution. The other issue, which also speaks to the issue of coordination and also emphasizes the need that we should put emphasis on establishing CFS. We are not confident that we are doing that well in that regard, but the issue of aims, as we also engage with communities, still come up. Then it emphasizes the need for departmental coordination as engaged, but also it emphasizes the need for public awareness on this issue, so that we can find a common solution. Now, both the issue of feedback as well as the issue of pay, we also think that those issues are significant because they would improve the confidence that people would have in the service in particular, but also in government in general. So we raise this with our leadership. In Limpopo in particular, we've come across an issue there which is a new issue for our program. People, in a general statement, they've spoken strongly about the issues of corruption in government departments, but also the issues of rhino poaching. As a unit, we've not formulated an approach. It's a new issue that just came in the second quarter. We've not formulated an approach as to how we should proceed with the leadership as well as research in follow-up on this issue. In various provinces, again, on the issues of the crime prevention programs, we note that there's a divergence on stakeholders who participate in crime prevention programs. And again, what we noted earlier about agreement, the intention is to feed into that aspect so that as we get more civil society organizations are trained to work with us, we can then encourage them to participate at a local level in a manner that's suitable for them in kind prevention programs, because we think that they could broaden the base for social wisdom. For instance, if you take a minor issue like community patrollers, if we were to involve the Justice Department in that issues that we're just talking about now, the DBA and so on, the rights of women and so on, that intervention could help to enrich the discussion at a local level, but also when it comes to CSS. On the slide 7, Honorable Members, the last comment we would like to make there is that the last time we presented, we spoke a lot about the resources for CPS. The reason for that is that we think that we need to change the orientation. What happens is we establish CPS and the executive committees engage with us, but it doesn't speak to the need for active citizenry. Now, if we want them to be able to mobilize communities, then we must provide resources. Then we're hoping that by the end of December, we should have a model that provides for resources so that we change the focus of the structure that's been established instead of focusing only upwards towards the police station, to focus more importantly on the community so that it can on a regular basis receive community input. But if we then need to capacitate that process, we need to come up with a model that will involve the provincial embassies, offices, the provincial staff, and then ourselves to enable them to convene these meetings and, if possible, to have regular dates, like, for instance, the first Friday of every month, they must have health and security meeting so that the community knows. But we are hoping that our members by end of December, we should have come up with a funding model. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. As you can see from the slide that we've met our target for the first 6 months, and this has actually given you some information on the projects that we've been doing. So why they said the police, we have no police on that. We presented to DESCOM, we got input, we are the meeting, basically a subcommittee. So what they said is we have to go to cabinet, so they can step there some moving on that. So I think we'll bring in the next 2 weeks or so. We have also taken the decision that because it's a white paper and it hasn't been circulated and nobody in public has seen it, that we're going to have to advertise for public comments. So we're hoping to start advertising in December and starting to comment by January and then have an application in January. So we seem to say there's some movement on that. On the information that Chen report, we met that also in the second quarter, basically a report on drugs and drug trafficking in. We try to look at countries that we focus on financing. We try to look at youth and organized crime-related activities. I'm not sure we were affected by DPCR a lot in this process. On the anti-gang diagnostic report, it's actually discussed here, but I need to explain the process here. And I think I did explain it in the first quarter with you, but maybe it needs to further explanation. Last year, when we were started developing the strategy, we found out through DEFCOM that there were four other government departments working on national integrated anti-gang strategy. Some focus on certain public research nationally, some focus on what their departments are doing. So we met collectively as a team, and then we decided we'd rather just work together. At that time, the DD has also requested NIPOC, the coordination committee, the body, to conduct a national threat and risk assessment of the gang situation in prisons, but also even beyond that. So that ended at last in March this year. Unfortunately, because we had passed the strategy because we wanted the findings of that, but we still think we decided in the past that let's look at current strategies in the provinces, what works, what doesn't work. So we started an assessment, a diagnostic report for the strategies. We had done that by the end of the financial year, and then we were requested to go to other provinces. So we had done two provinces because we were elected to go to provinces, then we were asked to go to two other provinces. So we've done that. Basically, the report is drop on. It's almost ready. I'd like to present it to the secretary before we send it to you.
But simultaneously that the council has now started the strategy development. We're hoping to finish it by December. I heard last week that maybe it's planned to the end of the financial year because the departmental has been closed to process and everybody has other commitments as well. There is work going on that. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Here with regards to the animal movement and produce goal, that target has been met. This goal was consulted with the department and published for comments. The comments are being considered as fact into the draft goal for submission to Senate at the end of January 2015 for approval for introduction to Parliament at the end of February 2015. With regards to the bill for the poetry tabled in Parliament, these two were not tabled as our ABCs, because of the prioritization of the firearms control amendment bill, which has taken up quite a bit of our time. I'll speak about that just now. But with regards to the critical infrastructure bill, review the National Key Points Act. That bill will be finalized on once paper has been approved and finalized, and meanwhile we will work with law that can be created in the interim. With regards to the protection of constitutional democracy against terrorists and related activities of men, the bill is almost done, it's almost complete. We've been several workshops and meetings with various stakeholders, NPA Financial Intelligence Center and the GOV team have been working together to try and tighten up various sources of this goal. There's one more meeting that we want to be trying to arrange, which is in the process now. We should be meeting in the next few weeks with Home Affairs for their input and their comments to finalize the goal. With regards to the firearm control amendment bill, as I mentioned before, the bill was offered and presented to DEFCON, JCTS, DG Clusters Committee, and approval was given to processing cabinet. The bill was then also presented to the JCTS Cabinet Committee on the 7th of October, to a full cabinet on the 1st of November. Cabinet has tasked the drafting team to look at certain areas of the bill and pass them up, which we aim to agree. We'll be meeting with the rest of the drafting team on Friday in the hope of finalizing this goal. Right, then, with regards to the regulations, the draft regulations under the Criminal Law for Procedures Amendment Act, the DNA Act, they've been here. Consultations have been held with critical role players, and these regulations have been presented for public comment and will be formulated with the Act.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next presenter, Colonel Apple.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of the MME targets, we have targeted to undertake 100 qualifications, 100 visits in the first quarter. And we have overachieved the target at 185 where we were actually assessed. Now this is utilizing the national monitoring tool. And for the second quarter, the target hasn't been confirmed yet, as the reports were only received from the provinces last week, the due date was last week. So we will then be able to provide that information as soon as the reports are available. And we have managed to compile the service trends, service delivery trends analysis report. Now this report is based on all the station visits that have been conducted by national and provinces. This report is a trend nationally and makes recommendations to the SAPS at a more strategic level. And recommendations that are arising from the actual station visits, which are captured in the station report,
is then dealt with at a provincial level by our provincial offices, and they make follow-up on those recommendations at that level. We at a national level, we look at trends, and we then inform policy in that regard. In terms of the budget assessment, one of our key functions is to monitor the utilization of that budget. We have also done that, where we look at whether the priorities for the priorities that have been set out for the past 5 years have been addressed by itself, and whether the budget has been utilized in that regard. And also in addition, we looked at the priorities, the 10 key priority areas that were highlighted by the minister, whether have they been addressed by the APS. And for the first time, we were then able to consolidate non-financial and financial information to say the SAPS, for the public sector, has received a clean audit. But does it mean that they are meeting the objectives that they have set out? So for the first time, we then consolidated where we could find information, the non-performance, non-financial and financial information in that report. Implementation of IPED report, recommendations, sorry, we have produced a report in this regard. We have initiated a process where we are chairing a committee that is looking at the implementation of these recommendations. The committee consists of senior such officials and also IP officials and ourselves. And last week on Wednesday, we had a meeting with Steph Asset because we were looking into the issues of inconsistencies with the statistics between ourselves, SAP, and the IP. And also just to agree on the terminology that is being used by the IP to say when the case is finalized, what does that mean? When the case is referred to the SAP, and what does that mean? So we felt that we needed to have intervention from statistics SA so that we then agree on common definitions in this area, because this was leading to a lot of problems. Now, we were also expected to look at the implementation of the public order policy, and because of lack of capacity, we then subcontracted a provider to gather the data on our behalf, and draft report has just come in. Now, the focus of the study is to look at how communities, or how the lack of knowledge that is from the community side contributes to most of the protests and violence in our country. So it's quite an interesting study. It will then be tabled once finalized at the JCPS cluster and with recommendations for the SAPS. The last area is on enemy capacity building. We have undertaken an exercise to deliver training based on all the tools that we are utilizing to the 9 provinces in the country, to ensure that the consistency in terms of the data that is gathered. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Aisha.
Thank you very much. Our approved food establishment comprising 121 positions, of which 107 of them have been filled today, which translates to about 88% of our establishment, leaving us with a vacancy rate of 14, which is about 10% of our establishment. We will explain later as to how we are going to fill the post,
to ensure that within this quarter, by the end of December, all reports should have been paid. Honorable members, we do have challenges like any other organization, which continuously lead us to say the ceiling of this position only keeping the 100% that we want. The most common challenge that we have is what I normally call the leaking basket analogy, which is a situation where you continue to try to fill the water into a basket, but because it has holes in it, you don't always get this basket full. It often happens because of the promotion that we focus from within, where we promote from within, and where you find that people, as soon as they get promoted, they use the agencies where they were, and we have not used those agencies again. It's a continuous process that keeps us busy. Over and above this, we also have situations where people are declining offers after we have interviewed them and we have appointed them. We also have situations where people are declaring issues, and this is causing us to drag in terms of the positions. The current additional positions that we have identified that must be seen as soon as possible are, amongst others, the post of the HOD, the Secretary of the Police, which has been already advertised, and we are currently capturing the number of applications that we have received. We also have the post of Director Fraud and Anti-Corruption, the Director IG, as well as the Director HRM, which has just left us at the end of October. Then I've already alluded to the fact that we intend to fill all these vacant positions by the end of September. This is how we intend to do it. Currently, we have 4 posts out of the 40 which are due for appointment. That will be taking place in the next 2 weeks. We have also 5 positions that are due for shortlisting that will also be taking place in the next 2 weeks. And then the final 5 posts will also be advertised during the course of the week. I thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and Honorable Members. Just in case of just an overview of how far out the process of the Country Police Association. The Country Police Committee is almost, well, actually for my duties, we have submitted the submission to the Secretary. And I'm sure my Secretary will be the Minister for approval. So we are quite confident that by the end of this month, we'll have a commission in place. With regard to the Group Management Committee chapter, we have advertised the position, we have received the applications. One of the challenges with regard to applications is that some of the applicants have sent the application by court. And unfortunately, it's a strike at the prosecutor's which we are not sure how they are going to resolve their challenges, because we need to get those applications so that we have a full application in order to get the most appropriate or suitable candidates to shortlist. But we also hope by the end of this month, if not next month, we should be in the position of being chairperson of the Management Committee. The 3-year rolling internal plan, we actually finalized it by the beginning of the financial year, which was the 1st of April. But as you know, in terms of the Public Management Act, we are required by law that the 3-year rolling plan should be approved by the Public Commission. So hopefully when we get them on board this month, we get it approved. But nonetheless, we have projects that we have planned, and we are actually planning a receipt now. 2 projects have been completed this quarter, with 1 completed in the 1st quarter of this social year. With regard to the appointment of this manager, we appointed the successful candidate around July this year, and we are busy with the management service management. Risk management assessment to not have a risk management report. So that is really depending how far we are with that in terms of risk management.
Thank you very much. Finance supply chain.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. The next slide is just to give feedback on our administrative duties.
Just some brief feedback. I fulfill our administrative duties in terms of financial supply chain management. The retail budget review has been performed. The demand management plan submitted to National Treasury. And which other verification conducted. And ICT application systems developed. That is the transversal systems in consultation with National Treasury and SIDA. We are waiting roll out of infrastructure from the SIDA to be able to be fully operational. The next slide gives an overview of our spending for the half year. The underspending is still a concern. We're sitting at 37.4% including commitments, but excluding commitments we are at 34.4%. On a straight line basis, we should be at 50% because it's half the financial year. And the next slide shows the breakdown of our expenditure, the economic classification. It still reflects the same picture that we are understand. Maybe just to preface the commentary on that is that we are accounting on the basis of the modified cash flow on an accrual basis, which means that the expenditure that we record is actual cash flow. And this is helpful that since we are in transition to become a designated department, there are costs that we have incurred, but which we have not yet expended funds on. I can make an example of the ICT infrastructure. Those costs are currently being carried by SOPS. But once all the funds will be transferred, us, we'll have to actually refund SOPS on that. And we have been in discussion with the CETA on this. They've given us an estimate that they're going to address 17 million for ICT infrastructure and support. 17 million, which far exceeds our understanding in that regard. And the other overhead that SOPS is hearing on our behalf, I can talk of facilities management, contract and lease management, which they have not yet allocated to our unit. So the cost that we have shown on our financial statements is such as the cash. And it's not actually the true situation. But once all functions are transferred at the end of this financial year, then it will actually show the actual cost situation. On the note, let's explain the situation that up to the end of September has been at 34% excluding commitments, but if you take commitments into account, it's 37.4%. But when it's not straight on this, it should be at 50%. Which comes to 15.6% of the budget, which is underspent. Because our budget is roughly 100 million, 15.6% is 15.6 million. So in comparison, grow it, we should have spent that 14.2 million by the end of this by the end of this year. And we're saying that compensation of employees at 7.1% spending, we should have been at 50%. The main reason is the Dragon Post and the outstanding watches and merit for 2013-14. Although the admin program is overspending due to the small allocation of budget on goods and services, it will be corrected in the adjusted estimate of national expenditure. The Leasing Policy and Monitoring Values Program are only at 26% of our spending on goods and services. And during the adjustment estimate of national expenditure process, evaluation of the goods and services budget was done in order to reduce the pressure on admin budget. As the move to adjustment the department in bringing expenditure not taken into account during the previous budget cycle. But the understanding is still a concern to us, even though the actual cost is not just any reduction of our expenditure.
Thank you very much. I think it's quite important for the first time the Secretary is complying in terms of Section 13 of the Own Act for giving us this report. So well done to the Acting Secretary. I like the approach today, complying and we are supposed to congratulate you for that. Members, let's go to questions. Two per member and no second reading debate speeches.
for the first round. Honourable Mulavaisi.
The number of consultative forum meetings with IP helps to and can we have a reason for the failure to produce or and table quarterly report for the project as mandated through 713 of the Act? This is
Pooja. Honorable Mula.
Thank you, Chairperson. Exchange provincial secretaries and aides as the post being advertised. Are these posts being advertised? If so, when are they going to be appointed? In slide 5, number of national CSF working groups meeting facilitated and said members of NCSF not available as last minute. What do you mean? And where were they? Are they waiting for? Thank you.
Honorable Mabija. Vice Chairman of Notwala. Honorable Smirov.
I have no question.
Honorable Bailey.
Thank you. Just two quick ones. The first question is in relation to the provincial secretariats, which are obviously crucial as operational sort of mechanisms on the ground. And my concern is that at this stage they're still unfunded mandates, and that reflects in the uneven sort of output we've seen from the law presentation. So my question is, for the in the foreseeable future, as the secretariat moves to being designated partners, is there any possibility of funding and some kind of subsidization going to the provincial secretariats in the short term just to eat up that load? And then a very quick one is the service provider who was contracted for the public water policing study. Who was that provider, just the name of the relevant research organization.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Karibana.
I just have a question. It was a bit of an issue that I had in reading when we got the input on firearm legislation, we sent it, and they said, well, they were going to do public hearings, but they didn't because of this committee. And yes, we found huge issues at the firearm registry, but it's just a case of when will that project be done? Or is it going to be left to the committee to do it? Or because usually that procedure is done prior to it coming, but then we hold additional hearings. So I'm just interested in that. And reading through it, I'm a bit concerned that you seem in that what was given to us to try and legislate away a court project. So I know we'll discuss that at length, but I'm very concerned about the fact that you're trying to do that in that legislation. Thank you.
Right, there's two things from my side. In terms of section 6, 2A, Roman 3, the secretariat must make available recent, relevant and evidence-based research to the minister and department. I just want to know what the track record of the secretariat's upon, when are we getting these reports? Because I assume, if it is in the act, we must get those reports so we can evaluate them as well as going forward. There was indication by one of the program managers regarding the WIPO paper process. I just want to know, I'm just a bit concerned about December, January advertising for comment. I mean, there's been recent cases as well where it's better maybe to advertise and get input when there's no holiday season, and maybe just when the matter will become to us as a portfolio committee. Okay. Let's take those questions and then we'll take a second round.
the question on land sale to comply to the CFO. So that is full of that is the responsibility of the safety chief. But I'm hoping that he can assist me in that regard to be him and the manager of strategic planning. If I can just respond in that regard. With regard to the invitation on the consultative forum in the next context, that we had failed to get the invitation from the former secretary. The question is also a tied up practice. Can that are going forth will be happening regularly. And the next, the first crunch for the senior schedule for next week. Time frame for the appointment of the secretary. The closing date was the 31st of October, but there has been concern that because of the cost of the strike, people might have been disadvantaged to this date from our knowledge. There's been no complaints about that. And we've already received a significant number of applications. And that service we will rather have been over to the ministry. But yeah, so it's very difficult for us to respond in that regard. The firearms registry. Okay. Please, the communication forms of the legal must respond to. The workshop is assuming the responsibility of asking for it. Most of us significant things respond to that one. So this is provided for the pop study if Ms. Q, if you can respond. Then we're going to make the research available. We are aware of our obligations with regards to the Act. The problem was twofold. The one was around the verification and also the slight report. The second was the element of classification. And so initially when the report was evaluated, it was specified as the non-services of declassification in relation to this. And we hope it will add some financial next calendar year to urgently comply with all the requirements that come to issue to the portfolio committee. In respect of the white paper, we are conscious of the fact that the disability there is an inspired period and we want this to really get optimal feedback from some people. We're taking into account with the last standard meeting and then after that we'll be getting both in terms of the firearms control of the law and the white paper DC. And we were hoping to piggyback on the parliamentary process to say, because both the elements, both the solicitation and the writing is so urgent, and at the same time we don't want to undermine the public consultation process. So we're doing two, three parallel things. As far as my case is concerned, we had a preliminary consultative meeting on the 28th and the 29th of October. That's not going to be changing the context, the context is really being published. And then we'll do that, and we will integrate the comments from the committee, as well as the comments that come out of that workshop. And then we were hoping that the Portfolio Committee could have some ideas on those the documents, and then we'll catch the comments and then we'll amend accordingly. And then maybe Mr. Between Mr. Stone and Advocate Bow, they want to respond to the comments on the firearms industry. Just to say that the legislation is just one of the elements or one of the pillars that we are using in order to alleviate the challenges within the firearms industry. There's also the issue that we've raised actually. That the honourable member on the composition of the board, so that's another challenge. And then
fact is spoken to the data and our strategies. Now, when we interrupt the education, which is of course there is now, the outcomes of the sports, the report is available. We just didn't release it because the minister had wanted to release it to some of the simple captains for an hour of some of the things. But that doesn't mean that the activities that were identified as important. And it does continue. The minister has extracted those things that needed the National Commissioner's immediate attention, and that was given to her, and now we're waiting for feedback on the National Commission. So there is ongoing work, and seriously, we're not using the legislation as fake goals. Carlos, if you could just respond to those other questions, please.
National Working Group. Seriously, there's some dismantles as facilitated by our friends. The National Working Group involves members from other departments like Correctional Services and Justice, and it was established by DELCO. As the chairperson would note, the meeting did take place in the first quarter, but apparently when the relevant manager tried to convene in the second quarter, he wasn't able to succeed. So we've decided that we'll raise the issue at DEFCON. But the importance of this committee is that it serves as a peer review mechanism for us. As we facilitate, before we go to DEFCON, at least there are other departments that can comment on the progress. So it's extremely important that this national committee should pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. On the issue of provincial budgets, Chair, up to date, four provinces are in the process of instituting the provincial secretaries. Some were appointed, and some were the positions of secretaries were advertised, so they are participating in that. Furthermore, all provinces also have now aligned with the new budget and program structure, and also recently we had a review of the customized indicators. So all provinces are participating, and the issue of funding of budget was never raised during the last few months.
Thank you. Other responses?
Thank you, Chair. The service provider applied to undertake the exercise on public order is Limtech, L-I-M-T-E-C-H. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. I think the question relating to the Firearms Control Act, if I understood the question, the reason for the failure to, legislate our way for process, I'm assuming that relates to the green licenses.
Yeah.
Chairperson, in terms of that provision, the transitional provision in the amendment bill that we are proposing deals with providing for a period of 2 years for licenses issued in terms of the repealed Arms and Ammunition Act to provide a period of 2 years for the licenses to be renewed without any period of prosecution. And the reason for the amendment, the court challenged this interim order pending the finalization of the main application. Instead of dealing with the court matter, and we have a legal opinion from the state advisor, chief state advisor, that provision that we are proposing is constitutional and doesn't offend any constitutional rights. But in terms of the amendments, Chairperson, the whole idea is to have one legal regime to regulate the control and management of firearms, and that is the Firearms Control Act of 2000. The difference with the Repeal Arms and Ammunition Act is that there was no provision for a prerequisite for a competency certificate to own a firearm, whereas in terms of the new policy and the new legal framework, in terms of the firearms control as part of the proper control of firearms so that firearms don't get into the hands of irresponsible persons, then the competency certificate would be a requisite. So So there is a new area that we're providing for, and one legal regime rather than two separate legal regimes to unify that for sure.
Well, we're still going through the briefing, so I think if we can just park the firearms until we get the briefing.
Other questions? Other responses?
Sipo?
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. With regard to our expressing responsibilities concerning the financial reporting responsibilities, I can confirm to the committee that we are fully compliant in terms of that on a monthly, quarterly, and annual basis. On a monthly basis, we do submit our IYR to the National Treasury, and on a quarterly basis, we do also comply with the reporting responsibilities, as well as on an annual basis with regard to the annual budget, APP, the strategic plan, and any reports that are required. Thanks.
Further out, Honourable Lukasi, then Honourable Dwala.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. You presented your 20 talks in 2013 and analysis of such budget to the portfolio committee in March 2013, ever since then have not presented anything. Can you tell us why? My next question is, can you provide us with a breakdown of all civil society partnerships entered into, and what is the nature of these partnerships mentioned?
Honorable Paula.
Yes, yes. One of them has already been asked. The relationship between IPEC and the Secretariat. They have the interaction with IPEC from the committee before us. There are certain nominations that we make at the committee in relation to the manage IPEC, what to conduct with us, particularly around the issues of reporting. Participation in hearings within the FAPS. Now, I want to find out from the Secretary if that is happening, and if not, why not? If IPED does report yourselves in terms of information received from staff by IPED on cases with intelligence, how are you able to verify that? I will pause there.
Further questions in this round from our members? No questions. Let's get the responses and then we move on to the firearms presentation and after that the regulations.
Just the relevant members to switch on. This the organized branches and partnerships. So we'll be saying partnerships beyond the reasons we say. So look at this.
Chairperson, thank you. Chairperson, when we what the Commission of Civil Society does not include NGOs, it only applies to organized aspects of the public, like your trade unions and your churches. So we've got relationships with FOKU, SAPU, the traditional leaders, and the reasons why we've proceeded the way we've done it, because when we look, for instance, with the issues and the regulations, for instance, on CPS, now the participation of the police also in crime prevention programs, it also affects their members. So we want to get a sense, when we hold our workshops, we want to get a sense from them as to how they feel about the changes we want to make. Also, when we deal with the churches, for instance, the issue is if
the communities in terms of crime prevention, people patrol a particular area because there is a particular reason why we need patrols there. But the message needs to be broadened beyond the exercise of patrolling. We must speak about this within our indigenous movement. We must also speak about this in our churches. We must send the message about that particular area, that particular locality. So the reason why we established these regions is so they can fit directly into crime prevention programs that we have.
Any other responses outstanding?
Thank you, Chen. In terms of the analysis of the budget, it is true we were requested by the portfolio committee to come and make a presentation in 2013. We have since compiled the reports on a 6 monthly basis since then. Our understanding was that it needed to be clarified whether the portfolio committee expects us to table these reports as well. Because in terms of DVA, it is clear that these need to be tabled in Parliament. So I think we need to get direction from the committee in that regard. Civil society partnerships, we also have established a reference group that we work with that looks at all issues that relate to gender-based violence and also other legislation that are under the responsibility of the minister. Now, what we found is that the group was too huge, so we have then established working groups within that. So we have a working group on GBA, we have a working group on Child Justice Act and the various legislations that we're looking into. That information was forwarded to the committee previously. Our relationship with IPIC, in terms of the monitoring of recommendations that have been made by IPIC to the FATS, as I indicated earlier, we are chairing a committee at a technical level, which then feeds into the consultative forum that is then held between the head of the IPIC and the Secretary of Police. We meet on a monthly basis, and as I also alluded to that last week, we were dealing with statistical issues. Now, for us to be able to say a case has been received by the SAPS, we need verification from IP in the form of the actual case. So what happens is that on a quarterly basis, IP sends to us all the individual recommendations, case by case, a summary of the report, not the actual report, and we then verify that with the statistics that they've provided us, and we then forward those to the SAPS, because before there was an indication that they don't receive this report. So we took it upon ourselves to make sure that these are received by the SAPS. And then we then sit as a committee and at whether have they been addressed or finalized, hence then we then write a report to the minister to this effect. Thank you.
Right, I think we put the end of this presentation just indicates that we still need from the committee side the trend analysis report from the secretary and the monitoring of station unit visit reports. We come into the next presentation, the Firearms Control Act 2000 and the FCA Amendment Bill 2014. Since it's a technical amendment, so we will need a high level briefing on it. But I think importantly we'll engage with that after the briefing. There's also a debate in civil society and broader community on where we are in terms of firearms in South Africa as a country. Where are we? And the portfolio committee has got a duty also to engage in that debate. Where we are, what should be done to ensure that we have the necessary measures in place to ensure that we are safe and secure environment. So let's go first through the presentation and then we'll take questions.
Sorry, Chief, I'm correctly, we don't have copies of the presentation.
It was made available this morning, there's open copies. Has the three members got the copy? Is Honourable Mdele?
Apologize for sharing the presentation very late. We've seen the presentation that we had when in government. The reason why we had initially wanted the discussion to be postponed was sadly because there's a lot of engagement now amongst civil society and South African youth as a whole with regards to guides and the better management thereof, the better control thereof. And how, as government, we should be tightening the management of the gun. And in that regard, as I indicated earlier, our minister wanted to release the report on the challenges in that year. And then also Cabinet wanted to make the announcement, and so we really want to preempt the briefing of Cabinet. However, because the Employment Committee has such an important role to play with regards to ensuring that we exercise our responsibilities as civilian secretariat, we thought it prudent to share with the Employment Committee the kinds of legislative amendments that we have proposed to Cabinet. This is not the final document, because Cabinet had asked that we sign it a bit more. And I think it would be useful to get input from the Portfolio Committee in the process of the assignment so that we will take it back to Cabinet and also take this discussion into consideration.
Thank you, Chair, Honourable Members. I'll just go into the brief process leading up to the drafting of the current amendment bill which was presented to the JCPS Cabinet Committee. The process, resulted in an analysis of the current Act in terms of identifying the gaps and weaknesses. But the general view of all the practitioners and the commentators is the current Act is a really good Act, and the problem lies with the implementation. But having said that, we've identified some areas that require amendments with a view to strengthening the Firearms Control Act in terms of the policy, in terms of the non-proliferation of firearms and the control and management of firearms as stated by the Secretary. Chairperson, the bill was drafted jointly with the Secretary of Police and members of the South African Police Service legal team. And in the process, there were recommendations from that was made in terms of the committees which identified gaps and weaknesses. So we harnessed that energy and also used that to improve the amendment. Consultations were held with certain identified stakeholders, and I'll talk to that as I do my presentation later. And the bill was not published in the Gazette as originally intended. The recent visit, as indicated by the chairperson of the committee, to the CFR also highlighted certain problems, and that resulted in us looking at certain additional legislative problems in the current Amendment Act. Now, in drafting the amendment bill, before it was submitted to Cabinet's committee, we obtained the Chief State Law Advisor's preliminary opinion on the provisions which are just outlined in the next few slides. And the view was that the amendment that was proposed was constitutional, and he put these responses to the Cabinet Committee. Having said that, Chairperson, I think it's important to, before I go into the deeper reason of the bill, just to reiterate, it's not on slide, but I'll just indicate the objectives and purpose of ACT as contained in the current Firearms Control Act. And I think it's important to bear that in mind. And the objective of the Firearms Control Act is to establish a comprehensive and effective system of firearms control. I think that is an objective that's still relevant, and it's a principle that we're working from. And the purpose of the Act is to enhance the constitutional rights to life and bodily integrity. Importantly, to prevent the proliferation of illegally possessed firearms and providing for the removal of those illegally possessed firearms from society. And secondly, to improve control over legally possessed firearms to prevent crime involving the use of firearms. So that purpose, as I said, is quite important. It has a two-pronged approach. The one is to address the proliferation of illegally possessed firearms, which has been in the public domain as a concern. And the second one is the legally possessed firearms to effective control. So it's both operational and legislative purposes of the Act. It's also the other important purpose of the Act is to enable the state to remove illegally possessed firearms from society, and to control the supply, possession, and safe storage, and to detect and publish the negligent use of, or criminal use of firearms. So what that purpose talks about is the responsibility of the state to remove illegally possessed firearms, however that may have come into possession of, the possession of illegally possessed firearms. And also to provide for detection and punishment of the negligent or criminal use of firearms.
I'm so terribly sorry to interrupt, but could you ask the man next to stop snoring? I'm finding it very distracting and it keeps interrupting what I'm hearing.
Someone had to come and wake him up. What was that? Do? Can you stop snoring? Very embarrassing. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Thomas, for your The other important aspect, as indicated, is to establish a comprehensive and effective system of firearm control and management, and that's key to the Central Firearm Register, that is responsible for the processing of application and drafting of licenses of users. And importantly, to ensure the effective monitoring and enforcement of legislation related to the control of firearms. So that is the purpose of the Act, and in the absence of any comments, I think that would be the principles that will be used in terms of strengthening the firearms control regime. Chairperson, in terms of the key provision of the bill, as the chairperson quickly identified, it deals mainly with technical amendments to align itself with the Amendment Act of 2006. And other aspects relating to technical definitions, etc. I want to deal with the technical details just to go to the salient key provisions. Now, the bill is not presented, I think the presentation talks to the clauses in the bill. But what the clauses provide for technical associations in respect of the sports shooting, hunting, including professional hunting, as well as firearm collectors, to verify applications for the position of firearms by centers and ammunition centers. The reason for that change is to ensure integrity of members of accredited associations, so we don't have optimistic members at the firearms. So there's an obligation placed on the accredited associations to verify that the member is of good standing and the nature of the nature of the firearm license, whether it's for shooting or for hunting and the different types of firearms for that purpose. Then, as indicated, the competency certificate is a prerequisite in terms of the Act. Now, there have been problems with the interpretation and the validity period relating to the competency certificate. Because while the Act provides for a competency certificate valid for 5 years, unless renewed or terminated, there have been a practice where just before the expiry of the period of validity, the applicants apply for a new firearm in terms of the Amendment Act, because in terms of the Amendment Act, the competency is linked to the last firearm that is applied for. And that created, in a sense, a a situation where they're in the perpetual validity of the competency system. So in order to address that gap and the weakness and the uncertainty is to provide for the uniform period of 10 years for validity period of competencies. So irrespective of when the license is right on the license applied for, the competency period would have a start and an end of period which would provide legal certainty. Then in terms of clause 6, the provides for a fifth license to be issued relating to a cap and ball firearm. Now that request has been made by the National Association of Arms Collectors, NACSA, of South Africa. The cap and ball firearm is an old firearm, it's sort of an antique firearm, where a projectile is used with an ignition system, a powder, in order to ignite and propel the firearm. So and that is mainly used by collectors. So there was a request to provide for that for collection purposes. So it will provide the definition of that type of firearm and provide for the fifth license, because there is a restriction of four licenses. Where the person possesses the self-defense license, which is only one, and three other licenses. So that is the maximum number of licenses the person can possess in terms of Section 13 and Section 15. So in order to provide for the collectors to collect the cap and ball firearm, the fifth license has been provided for. But that's a matter that may result in the prosecution. Chairperson, Mr. President, I'm going to be running for the time.
Could you maybe,
we're
not discussing
about
excessive reading, this is
Thanks. Chair, in terms of the clause 9 of the finance code, based on an obligation on firearms issued for private security purposes, to have the firearms ballistic tested in accordance with the program that the minister will publish with it. Likewise, Clause 31 provides for ballistic testing of firearms issued to official institutions. Now, official institutions are the South African Police Service, the National Defense, South African National Defense Force, and the Department of Correctional Services. So in terms of that process, the results of the ballistic tests will be based on the Integrated Ballistic Identification System, or IBIS as it's known to code, for purposes of existing crimes committed with the use of firearms. So it's like a fingerprint system, a database is created where firearms that have been ballistic tested will be used to match. So that is the first phase. Now there has been a request for that to be extended to broad society. So I think that's part of the refinement and improvement of amendment growth that will be looked at. Chairperson, Clause 22, as we all know, that the designated firearms officer or the DFO has a very critical role to play in terms of processing applications of verifying the integrity of the applicants, conducting various checks as outlines, while there being condition in terms of the Domestic Violence Act and other matters. So that is critical responsibility in order to ensure that the applicant is a person who is responsible and ought to be issued a license once all the criteria has been complied with. Then it also provides for duties for the DFO to close an application for competency certificates, licenses and authorizations, ensure compliance by police members regarding the possession and use of official firearms. Now that's been a problem with the management in some cases where police firearms are also so there is an added responsibility on the DFO to ensure that there is compliance and that the staff member undergoes the required competency testing so that firearms are issued to members who have incompetency certificates. They're conducting inspections at official institutions and business premises or private security businesses or service providers. Then also in terms of the protection of heritage, the South African Heritage Resources Agency will be inspecting firearms that can fall into that category, so the firearms which have a certain certification of the heritage status are not destroyed. And also the submission of the firearms for ballistic testing of the National Police. In terms of Clause 5, Clause 23 places duties on commanders and station commissioners with regard to the firearms kept at police stations. So, in order to control and proper management of firearms issued to members of the police service, there is a responsibility to be placed on the commanders, as well as disciplinary steps which are taken against members who have lost their firearms negligently or criminally, as well as the investigation of losses. As a conduct regular random inspections of official registers. Chairperson, this was seen to be an important provision to ensure that SAS management has a responsibility to ensure the safe capacity and the control of firearms issued to members to prevent losses either criminally or negligently. So that, then in terms of the appeal board, Chairperson, the current Act provides for a maximum of 5 members of the board to be appointed by the minister in consultation after certain processes. Now, there have been a backlog that has been created in terms of the refusals by the central firearm registry that results in the appeals being submitted or launched by those members who are not satisfied with the refusal. And in order to deal with the backlog, the proposal in terms of the bill is to increase, give minister the discretion to increase the number from 5 to whatever number that may be required, based on the volume of work as well as the exceptional circumstances. So the minister from time to time can increase the number of the members of the field board. Then the clause 38 provides a transitional provision relating to the licensing of the cap and ball firearm, providing for 18 months to license those firearms without fear of prosecution, and also that the all official institutions must within 1 year comply with the Act that relates to Chapter 11 of the Act that relates to the possession and use of firearms by official institutions. The Act provides for certain responsibilities on official institutions, including SAPS, Defense, Department of Police and Services, and the keeping of registers so that there is a proper control of firearms. Then in terms of the question that was raised earlier by Honourable Member Bana, there has been a problem with the licenses issued in terms of the repeals under the Ammunition Act.
Yeah.
What is commonly referred to as green licenses. Mm-hmm. Now there was a court challenge by the Weapon Hunters Association. And an interim order was given declaring that those licenses are valid. In order to deal with that, as I indicated earlier, in order to have one legal regime to deal with the control of firearms, is to provide, in terms of transitional provision, to provide for those licenses to be licensed within a period of, 2 years of renewal licenses, so that we have one legal regime and do away completely with the repeal after the initiative. Now this provision has been opined to be constitutional and doesn't affect the rights. So it's something that the state advisors or the chief of state have dealt with, and it's something that we'll be consulting with further as we go forward. In drafting the amendment bill, Chairperson, the consultations on slide 6, we, including the National Police Service, we consulted with the International Firearms Training Academy, because training was seen as an important area that needed to be dealt with, so that we have proper control of firearms and responsible persons who are properly trained on the use of firearms. And we also held consultations with the Professional Hunters Association, the South African Hunters and Game Conservation Association, the South African Gun Owners Association, the Green Shooters Association, and the Sports Shooting Federation. Now, the percussion cap and ball firearms, we consulted with the National Association of Arms and Ammunition Producers. However, in terms of the process, these are selected consultations and not broad public consultations, and that's the phase that we have proposed that we go through, so that we have a view of the broader session of the society. Including all the individuals who are not members of associations, etc. And we're hoping that that process will strengthen and give us an opportunity to strengthen the Chairperson, in terms of the organization and personal implication, I'm not sure whether you as present on that, given that those
are supposed to be
thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. Our members, we challenge for time because some of our members were involved in the question and answer session this afternoon to the minister, question to the Minister of Police, so they might not prepare. But I think it's valuable that we have got this briefing today. There is a debate in the community and society, and I think maybe what we should put politically should do in February. Maybe to have dialogue on that as a portfolio committee, because it's a lot of new members of this committee, and maybe you could get from the parliamentary research, but also maybe from the secretariat, that we may get a study maybe on what is the current firearms, let's say, regime in other countries, what are the jurisdictions as well, what is the current state of management of firearms in those countries. But I think more of the broader issues we must also look at is education, of course, of society, the question of alcohol outlets in communities, the role that play in firearm incidents. So there's a lot of, I think, more holistic issues we must also look at. So maybe it can be a joint project between the Secretariat and the Portfolio Committee that we put a day into a dialogue, maybe invite interested parties from all role players and say, well, in South Africa, we must ensure that there is a decrease in violent crime. Firearms play a role in that, but what should we do as a society, but also a portfolio committee going forward? So I think that's critical. And of course, the firearms amendment bill will control that will go forward. But I think there's a committee must first assess the environment. Are we happy with the current act? We have identified a lot of gaps at the firearms registry in terms of management. If there's new amendments to that, will SAPS be able to enforce it? That is a big question. Do they've got the budget provisions? I mean, currently 18,000 firearms a year are lost by private individuals. So what is the role of individuals ensuring that firearms are safe? Police, according to the stats, 2,000 a year in the SADF. So what should they do? Do they play their role? So I think you must take a holistic process and by February have a day in focusing on that. And I think members of the portfolio committee can also suggest maybe speakers and organizations, and then we can have a thorough walkthrough before we make come to conclusions at this stage. But let's have the view of members. Honorable Malabatsi and Honorable Kalibana and Honorable Kunabal.
Yeah, but my question is on what is your view on the amnesty? And my other one is what's your view on voluntary handing in of firearms? Thanks.
No, I think that's also issues we will in February discuss, because I think it's a contested view. There was a previous amnesty, does it work or not? Some jurisdictions it works and others not. No, I think that's issues. Honorable Grunewald.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, you have said our views. First, I just want to make sure that because on slide number 2, you said that the bill was not published in the Gazette. Does that mean it's not going to be published at all? Then I say it's a big mistake. It must be published. There must be an opportunity for the public to respond to these amendments. So that is very important to me. On the views, Chairperson, I completely agree with you. We might have a balanced view. And on that balanced view, Chairperson, I would like to see that when we have that session, that the police must also come forward with more statistics when we talk about violent crime where firearms are involved. Because I've asked questions. For instance, how many murders, for instance, or violent crimes have been committed by legal guns or by legal owners and illegal guns? We don't know at those statistics. Then it appears that sweeping statements are made to say that firearms control must be very strict, and then it is focused on legal firearm owners, which is wrong. We can't allow that. We as a committee have the responsibility to have a balanced view, but then we must also have those statistics that we know what we're talking about and not a thumb-sucking. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Kerbot, Honourable Kalibana.
Thank you, Chair. I think we would all agree that there's no one who owns an illegal firearm who's going to queue up to get a competency certificate and then apply for a firearm license. We know staffs have lost. I think we're up to about
15,000 firearms in the last 6 years. So that's out there. Those are the firearms out there. The people shooting at you are not ever going to apply for a license. So this is dealing with the legal firearm owners. And certainly technical amendments are always to be welcomed if tweaked, if it's necessary, and if it assists the processes. But issues like, and I'm interested in you saying ballistic testing for all firearms related to, say, private security firms. Is this going to be a huge expense for these firms? I don't know what you would charge to do a ballistic test for a single firearm. Because if we're going to pass something that's going to put a massive claim on firms, we might find ourselves in difficulty because the law, as it stands, says a firearm may only be tested if it's suspected it's used for criminal activity. So it's a sort of role reversal that we're doing. I see it absolutely as a fingerprint of the firearm. So that's all it is. But what are the cost implications? I think we do need to know that. Thank you very much.
Any other member? Final chance. Right. That's the final questions. Over to the Secretary for the final chance.
As I discussed earlier, it happened that we purged the technical amendments back, and we were saying that there needs some more substantive, given the challenges that this time to be confronted by the country. Some of the things that we should consider happening is the with regard to the sentencing, maybe we should be re-looking at that. So there's a number of things that we are currently reviewing. And then once it goes to cabinet, then we will be publishing it, we will be reaching it for public comment. Unfortunately, that position again is going to take place in December, January. And so once again, we will be requiring, it will be December, January, we'll be reaching it for 30 days. And we can extend the period probably until mid-February, and then we'll be dependent on the good quality to ensure that we maximize public participation with regards to comments on the amendment. And then I think that the recommendation by the chairperson is fundamental. We welcome the idea of a joint workshop. I think one day would be too little. Maybe we can look at an analysis of the current conditions and all the stakeholders get together. We can check out some of the figures. And then we can get international feedback, specifically on the continent. And then where would we then take the ball to the financial services, the amendments that we are going to be making will be even just, it will be more than technical amendments than treating, but it will actually be substantive amendments to the legislation, and we appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Before I ask for an extension for comments when it is published, you know, put it in December month, over the holiday season, I can tell you, the public is something that will come forward and say, but it was not fair, let's handle this thing fairly from the beginning, so please, let's have an extended time for comments on the bill. Thank you.
Right, members, thank you very much. We've come to the end of this Portfolio Committee meeting. There is one outstanding issue, that is the regulations, but we will talk to the Secretariat, maybe we will... Sorry, your questions. Mr. Salman?
On the amnesty and the voluntary handing over of firearms. So as we know, that the act provides for the voluntary surrender, the amnesty of firearms and the voluntary surrender. But there have been previous processes in this regard, and it's something that we need to look at in terms of the amnesty as well as the voluntary surrender. The view is that there is no constitutional obligation for their voluntary surrender, there is no compensation that is received under this. Now, in terms of the process, it has been something that we will be looking at in terms of announcing that process. Because part of the problem is that, and there have been anecdotal reports, we need to, as part of the research, we need to look at that. And that is, where firearms have been handled. Not the scheme for destruction, not the scheme for destruction, but sometimes it lands in the hands of... So it's something that we need to look at in terms of hacking that process,
so that whether a border of Ukraine and Israel will come firearms or embassies, it results in either destruction or agency.
Thank you for that. Right, Honourable Members' Delegation, we come to the end of this Portfolio Committee meeting. As I've indicated briefly on the regulations, we'll try and find a spot before the end of the year, maybe not in Cape Town, but maybe further north when we go on oversight visit, but we'll talk to the Secretary. Members, just to indicate, next week we will be meeting with the IFED regarding their implementation of their act and also their reports that ought to come to the committee, so we'll just want to highlight that fact as well. Today was, I think, quite important, and I think going forward it's critical that we in February look at this issue of firearms control and management in South Africa, and we will cover the date as well. I think currently there's no portfolio committee engagements in January, but the first or second meeting in February we will arrange this dialogue to ensure that everybody is aware of issues and that we look also at best practice elsewhere. Thank you very much, Linda.
You should better pass your bottle alcohol.